Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. David Duenas with my co-host Gable Montoya. It's Leaving in the Ring, my boxing fans' official radio show, and we're back. Last week we took a break. I know a lot of you guys were kind of ticked off that we did it unannounced, but had to be done. We always need that little, you know, stop time, man. Myself and our producer Dave Chen and Gable Montoya, we kind of get caught up with things, and we just kind of have to, you know, re-catch up and all the stuff that we got going on. But we're back at it again. There's a lot of stuff to talk here on Leaving the Ring. We need to talk Bernard Hopkins, Chad Dawson, Timothy Bradley, Amir Khan, Gary Shaw, you name it, we need to talk about it here on Leaving the Ring. Even upcoming fights that are going to be happening down the road, we need to talk about. Phone lines are going to be opening up in about 2 minutes. We got a lot of people that have been anticipating to want to call in and talk about the Bernard Hopkins here. So we'll open them up. Phone lines are going to be 347-215-7598. That's the number to call here on Leaving the Ring. Let me welcome my co-host, Gable Montoya. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm winding down, getting ready. You know, I'm excited. Back at it again here on the show, brother. You know, I was down over there in Los Angeles hanging out with you for a minute. And now I'm back over here in Northern California and enjoying the sun rays.
Yeah, dude, it's been perfect down here. I'm just kind of chilling. It's kind of nice that, you know, you don't have a lot of big fights happening this weekend where you all kind of get like a little bit of a break before the blockbuster that is Chavez Jr. versus Sebastian Zibbe this weekend. So, you know, I'm really gearing up for that because it's just going to be such a out of control press week. I'm actually writing stories on both guys. I saw Zibic in the gym yesterday, and he didn't really do a lot to make me go, you know, this is the guy that's going to upset the apple cart. He's kind of smaller. He's 5'11", but his frame is kind of smaller. I was really surprised how big Junior is.
You know, he's a big kid.
He was a kind of a lanky kid, and I hadn't seen him in a while, and he's just still growing, you know.
Yeah,
unfortunately, he's not getting much better as a fighter, but he's still growing.
That hairdo is, though. I tell you that hairdo is definitely growing with him.
He looks like a Mexican Vince from Entourage, you know.
he does.
But I don't know if anybody's had a chance to go on Max Boxing's YouTube page, but we've got sparring of Chavez Jr. with Vonis. We didn't show, I don't think, any of the Rashad Holloway part of the thing, but and it's pretty edited, but man, Chavez, you know, this guy, it's really interesting to me watching that media day, and Omar Chavez, who fights this weekend against our friend Genaro Chazancos down in Mexicali, he's actually looks like the better boxer. Like, he moves around well, he's got, you know, solid defense, you know, he looks like he wants to box. He's got a kind of a spring in his step. And then you watch Chavez Jr., and it's like he's like really heavy-footed. He doesn't appear to be particularly coordinated. You know, the power, I don't really think is all that. And he just kind of is more of a brawler type, but he's really tall. He kind of fights small, though. And I just, you know, it was really weird watching this. Everybody was crowding around Jr. and going crazy about him. It was like almost like a Pacquiao media day.
Really?
And they were watching him do the sparring session. Well, it wasn't that horrendous, but there was a lot of media there. And it was pretty much, you know, you couldn't really get a spot on the ring. You kind of had the kind of crowd in there. And then Omar starts to work out, and everybody goes and watches Junior on the speed bag, you know, which should have been called the slow bag, and the way he was using it. And Omar's looking good in sparring, and he's there, and nobody's really filming him. Like, his dad was watching. A few other people were watching.
Yeah, but look at who he's fighting, though. I mean, God. I mean, let's talk a little bit about that here.
You just think if his name was Julio, like, I might believe in him a little bit more. Like, you know, I might be like, you know what? Okay, he's the son of Chavez, and so that's why we're here. But the kid's got some skills. Whereas Julio, who has the name, isn't really. I'm sorry, but he's just really not that good. And
you know,
everybody kind of goes crazy about him. It's weird.
The thing though with Omar is that he's a kid that does kind of go for it. But he does get tagged a lot, you know. He doesn't know how to slip punches, but he's willing to, you know, play with the fire. He doesn't mind getting burned while he's in there lighting up the matches. That's the one thing I have to give to Omar. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. I'm just, both kids to me don't have exactly what their father brought, which was the intensity and the hunger. Just because we have to sit back and just be realistic that a lot of these kids that come from a legend, you know, they come from the seed of a legend, don't seem to blossom into that legend their father once was. I mean, Omar, I like the kid. I like, I have nothing personal against either one of the fighters at all. Julio, I just don't get him. You know, he's got everything in the makings to be a very popular draw, but he's fighting against it. To me, Julio just seems like a kid that has to. He's just basically doing it to make his daddy happy, and that's about as far as it's going to go. Let's pass it to some fight fans here, Gabriel. Let's see what they got to say. We got Anthony who wants to talk about Omar Chavez as well. You're on live right now, brother. I'm leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, fellas? Anthony out of Texas again. I just always wondering. I've been always trying to get YouTube Omar a little more, trying to find out, you know. Because I always hear from people like insiders like you guys saying that, you know, he's the better boxer. But I'm trying to figure out why he's kind of under the radar, why, you know, his brother is out there.
I think it's the name. You know, Gabe, this is what I think. I think it's the name, and I think it's the size difference. You know, Julio is just a big kid. So I think they just think of the marketing ability, you know, him fighting possibly as a middleweight, the investment they're putting on him. Well, Omar is just a smaller guy, smaller frame kid, but it does get in those trenches and does mix it up. To me, Omar's a little bit more exciting than Julio just because he's willing, like I said before, to go to that blaze of glory where Julio kind of tends to trail away from any type of real competition. Omar seems to really now, to me, and this may be a good thing, I don't know. If Omar continues to be under the shadow of his brother, he may be the guy that's going to be willing to take on the real competition.
And another thing, because I know he's facing a guy that has a lot of losses. People are questioning why this guy's in a fight with him. I don't get all my facts straight or anything, so I just want to – Didn't his brother, like, kill somebody in Mexico?
Yeah.
And
he fought a rematch with another kid.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's senseless. I mean, I'm pretty sure, Gabe, you're going to talk a little bit about that. I think it was Regal Regal Juarez that he had passed on?
I think it was Rodrigo.
Yeah, Rodrigo Juarez, who had passed away. It was a rematch that wasn't even necessary. You know, he had been – it was a – I think it was clear that Omar had won that fight or something. I can't really remember exactly how it went down.
It was a split decision, and then they did it again, and then, you know, one fight later, and then it was a knockout. You know, and they did it within the same year. And,
That's another thing is that, like, you know, I've been reading about his next opponent coming up on this weekend, and it sounds like this dude he shouldn't even be licensed, but I don't know, maybe it's because he's down in Mexico or – I don't know what the deal is with
that. I mean, that's what's kind of crazy is that, I mean, you know, people will say that, you know, it's down in Mexico, so screw it. But California's been licensing him, too. You know, this guy fights all over the place. You know, he's had losses in California, New Mexico, Puerto Rico, Phoenix, Japan.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico again. Then he went up to Canada to lose. Then he came back to California, got knocked out and won. In Arizona, he fought Mercedo Gesto, got knocked out in 7. Then he went over to Florida, and he got knocked out in 8. And then they brought him back to fight Gesto again earlier this year so he could get stopped on his stool. Now here he is heading off back to Mexico and probably going to get knocked out by a guy, you know, that I kind of feel bad for both fighters. I always kind of say this. It's like these guys, you know, he hasn't won in a long time more than one fight. You know, I think he had a win back in 2004, and then his next win happened in 2009. Beyond that, it's nine losses, and most of them have been stoppage losses. And here he is, you know. And Mexicali apparently, for a second, they were rethinking it, according to my friend and Z, who was looking it up, and then she said, oh well, Mexicali decided that he did pass his medicals and everything's all right. I haven't been able to get a hold of anybody down there. I'm not exactly connected in Mexicali. But, I mean, to me, it's just like, let's just do the fight and let's just get this done. It's going to be a knockout. It's going to probably be early. And, yeah, and here's the thing that's really kind of freaky is, I mean, he kind of fights all over the map. Generally, you know, you go back to 2004, he was at 130 pounds. He's been steadily rising. He had one, he fought Stephen Leweno, got knocked out by him. He's not even a big puncher at featherweight. Then he fought at 130, you know, in that neighborhood for a while. Moved up to 140 around 2009. And then he fought one fight in October last year at 146, went back down to 140 to get knocked out by Gesta. And now this fight will be fought, I think, at somewhere between 147 and 150. And that's kind of one of the bad things, not just that he's losing, but you're kind of moving him around in weight. He's just a body. He's just a punching bag that you can knock over. And that's really the danger.
Hey, Gabe, I just got one more thing before I don't want to waste much time. Are you gonna touch up a little bit? Because I remember seeing that crazy sparring session that went down between Vanes and Chavez. I mean, what's the aftermath of that? I mean, I know there was kind of like, I don't know if it was bad blood or maybe just like an in-gym rivalry going on. But, have you got to talk to get his afterthoughts, because I know he's been dying to spar with him.
Well, I was there for it. And it was kind of funny because Chavez did about eight rounds, I believe. And he did like five with Vanes, three with Rashad Holloway. And it was funny. We were all kind of looking at each other going, whose media day is this? You know, I thought it was Chavez Jr.'s. And apparently like the word was, and I didn't get this from Vanes, but just heard from other people in the gym, that when Chavez Jr. first came to Wild Card, not this camp, but just in general, everybody was aching to get a piece of the guy because they all just kind of look at him like, you know, Captain Silverspoon. And this session was interesting. The camera doesn't really pick it up on Max Boxing. I mean, you can find it on our YouTube channel, or I think I posted it on my Facebook. But they were facing me for the bell, you know, sounds, and Vanes comes out of the corner facing me and lands, like, you know, a couple jabs really hard on Chavez Jr. right off the bat. And you can almost see, like, physically, Vanes kind of look at him and kind of pull back just a little bit, like, okay, this kid has got nothing, and I better not clown him too hard. But as it went on, as my friend Z said, you know, Chavez Jr. is an uppercut magnet. You know, he just kept getting hit by the uppercuts. And I did a lot of filming of his footwork. I was filming it on my phone the whole time, and I pretty much have the whole session down. And his footwork, man, it's just, he's still just kind of sloppy. And he's got that left hook to the body, but the power doesn't really seem like it's there. He can land, but maybe he's got heavy hands, but even, you know, the sparring partners didn't really say that. They were kind of like, his power is like, you know, okay. And these are guys that, you know, on the scale of Pacquiao to Chavez Jr., you know, they kind of say, well, the power's not really there. So, you know, because both these guys have been in the ring. I actually don't think Vanes has been in the ring with Pacquiao, but Rashad Holloway's been in the ring with Pacquiao.
Yeah,
I've
kind of seen that, because I've been
like much, you know?
I mean, I've been in the gyms where they're telling a guy, hey, ease up on him, don't go too hard on him. And I know I saw Vanes laying on the ropes a couple of times, kind of letting Chavez get his shots off. And I know he got him a couple of times, and Vanes like, all right, let me get you back. I don't get the best of you. But I love it.
He just unloaded like a ton of punches on him.
Vanes has been wanting a piece of him from the get-go. I mean, he was here on Leave
With
Me, you know, saying that, hey, you know, I wanted to spar him, and he turned me down. He didn't want to spar, you know, Vanes. I guess it's now down to that point. He has to take on who's available there at the wild card in order to gain that respect. And, you know,
interesting.
Yeah.
There was one other weird detail that I thought was really interesting. The guy that edited the video is Brian Hardy, who does all our videos for us. He did those cool, the Areola, the Pacquiao point of view videos. But he's been with Max Boxing for, I think, 14 years, something like that. And he's filmed all kinds of guys, from Edwin Valero, so you name it. You know, there's a really cool video he gave me. I think I showed Dave, of Spadafora training in the gym. at the wild card and talking about Mayweather, that I think we're going to re-release when that fight gets made. But that's a whole other subject. But he talked about the sound of the punches. And this is a guy that's, you know, like I said, he's edited countless videos of different guys. He used to do our Gym Wars series where he'd have, you know, long sparring sessions that were like almost like fights in the gym at Wild Card and Maywood, all kinds of places. And he talked about the sound. And he said, you can tell Vanas has some power just by the sound. Like you compare it to like a Valero or somebody like that where it's like a deep bass to it. Whereas Chavez Jr., it's like a 22. You know, there's not much pop to it. And if it is loud, like that left hook is kind of loud, it's almost like it's slapping against his protective guard or his skin. But that doesn't necessarily equal power. There's not a lot of bass to it. If you go back and like just listen to it on headphones, and you can kind of tell the difference in power just by hearing the sound. And I thought that was interesting. I went back and did it, and yeah, there's just not a lot going on there. He's got a good chin, and he's resilient, and he pressures really well, and he's got good size at 6'1", and just a big frame. But other than that, I just don't see a lot going on with that fighter.
I agree.
That's just
my
opinion.
I definitely don't see a whole lot. I think that's why they've been moving them right along the way they have been for the, you know, for the past couple of years. Hey, Anthony, thanks, for brother, for calling in.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for the time.
No problem, man.
You know, let's talk a little bit about Bernard Hopkins. You know, a performance that some people were excited about, a performance where some people weren't too excited about it, and a performance where some people said, okay, man, should he take the test? I got to praise him. You know, I think the thing with me is that Pascal was the right opponent to put in front of him. For one, Pascal has shown in the past he does gas out. He's a little zealous when he gets into the ring. He doesn't know how to control himself, and he doesn't have very good ring generalship. He's a guy that basically fights off his athleticism, where Bernard kind of saw that, picked him, went after him, and we saw the outcome, what happened with the first fight. With the second fight, he kind of more or less knew, listen, it's going to take time for this young buck here to settle down on his feet and kind of be level-headed before he steps back into the ring. And that's exactly what it went about again. You know, and Bernard was able to really adjust to the last time what they were doing. He didn't kind of get mixed up. He used the right-hand lead perfect. Overall, I had a great performance. Great, great performance. Chad Dawson was being dogged out pretty heavily. You know, man, I got to disagree to a point. I was actually very entertained in what Chad Dawson, don't throw cups at me and bottles, guys, but I was actually entertained with Chad Dawson that night. You know, the thing that I think that screwed him up is when Manuel Stewart was trying to get more of an action-packed fighter out of him and told him, hey, you need to step it up. You know, you got to do this, you got to do that. To me, it just made now Chad a little bit more reluctant in letting the hands go, because now he's more or less looking for that one big punch KO. And now, and that's when it went to bore Chad rather than the Chad Dawson of him throwing a lot more combinations. If you watch that first, you know, half of that, what is it, 1-5, I believe, of the rounds, you could see that Chad was actually letting his hands go and kind of just basically working off his combinations, you know, and he was kind of breaking down the guy in front of him. But then after that, he went down to his shell, he shut down, he was using his defense, but he was looking for that those big shots, Gabe, you know, and that's what was a turnoff, I think, to a lot of fans. I got turned off in that later half of the fight, but I was definitely sitting down and excited what I was seeing for the first half of the fight.
I don't know if I would say go so far as to say I was excited by it. I thought he was fine in the first, you know, 1-5. You know, to me, I got some criticism from Gary Shaw's son about what I said, and Gary and I talked about what I said on Twitter regarding Chad. And, you know, a lot of it, to be fair to me, was me retweeting what fans were saying. And you look at it, and I think Twitter can sometimes be a nice gauge of what the fans think during the fight, but it could also fall into a serious groupthink where one guy makes a comment and somebody tries to top that comment, and all of a sudden it becomes a trending idea of this guy's boring, and let me talk about how boring this guy can be. I went back after you and I talked about it, about the fight, and I watched it again, and noticed it changed in Chad, and that he did start kind of loading up his shots. But maybe that's also Emmanuel Stewart saying, you know, you've done the work, you've broken this guy down a bit. Now it's time to step it up and get in there. But to me, you know, if everything was fine, why do they change to Emmanuel Stewart? Why do you get Emmanuel Stewart? Let's just look at it that way. He's an offensive teacher. He's a guy that's had, you know, really good experience with tall, lanky guys that can shoot downhill, and he generates more power through his technique of throwing that right hand. And you know, in some sense, he doesn't make these guys more exciting, because you look at Vladimir Klitschko, I don't even think, you know, Jermaine Taylor seemed more confused by him than anything. I just wonder if, you know, it's a mentality thing with Chad Dawson that you can't really change. That, and I've never really thought of him as a big power puncher. You know, he's kind of a pressure guy not so much a pressure guy, but kind of a volume guy that puts a lot of aggression out. At least he was early on. Since the Glenn Johnson fights, though, he seems like a different guy. He seems like he kind of got, to use Steve Kim's term, Edwin Rosario'd, where, you know, after Camacho fought Rosario, he became more of the Camacho that we think of, a guy that moves a lot, doesn't want to take a beating, doesn't want to stay there in the pocket. And Chad, I don't know, it's going to take a few fights, I think. When you get a new trainer, it's kind of like a quarterback. You're installing a whole new offense. It's not really in your body. You know, I know you've probably worked with a few different guys. I've worked with different trainers. Each guy throws the left hook different. They change your feet. They change everything. The way, you know, from using, you know, a vertical fist to a horizontal fist to all different kinds of things. And it takes time for that to become natural and in your body. And one camp, I don't think, is enough. You know, to me, though, there was a kind of a larger overall problem.
That with Emmanuel, regardless if it was one camp, I did see a change from him. I think that's what fans got to kind of sit back and look at. He was throwing more combinations in the first few rounds. You know, we were seeing a fluent puncher. You know, not a guy that had one punch KO, but a guy that was literally chopping wood. You know, and then after that, he kind of translated what Emmanuel was telling him, like, look, you got to keep the pressure on. You got to be, you know, whatever, you know, you got to bring a little bit more to the table right now. I think he ended up translating into it that you got to knock him out with one punch. And I think that's what Chad ended up getting stuck on, was he was being defensive, but not using enough offense. And he was allowing this smaller guy to land his jab and landing some good shots, left hooks, right hands, you name it, he was landing them. And Chad was just trying to really tattoo him with one big, big ink shot. And that's what, to me, I think that's where, if Emmanuel goes back and looks at those first couple of rounds, he would see how fluent Chad was, rather than trying to push him. I mean, there's only a certain amount, I think, with a guy with such a temperament like Chad Dawson, that you can push. You know, I think he got where Emmanuel was trying to go with them, where HBO was trying to go with them, what the fans want him to go to. And I think he was on the road to that path of going there. But I think he got confused in thinking, oh, he wants me to punch him and knock him out with one shot. And so he was loading up. And it screwed him up. I think it screwed him out of the whole complete fight. And it made him even look kind of more boring than what he originally kind of brings up fights, you know, in the TV view.
I think that's possible. But at the same time, you know, the fighter's got to fight, and he's got to figure things out for himself at some point. The trainer can whip, crack the whip and say, do this, do that. But, you know, to me, it comes back to this, is that Chad Dawson, you know, he's fought Tarver twice, you know, Johnson twice. His resume isn't bad or anything like that. But why is he getting a guaranteed shot at the winner of
I don't. You know, that just tells you
Pascal
power,
and Hopkins.
The power is to beat. You know, in HBO
another,
and everything.
Right. And I think that's a bigger problem, is that
right.
In your mind, you go, you know what? I've banked the first half of this fight. It's pretty much a done deal that I'm going to get this fight. Why take a risk? You know, I can throw a few shots here and there. I can kind of move around. I'm just, you know, trying to get in the guy's mind. I don't know if that's what his thought process was. But if you know I'm guaranteed a shot at this guy on HBO, I'm going to get a big payday, I'm going to fight the winner of this for the title, no matter what happens, as long as I win, is it really incumbent on you to be exciting or passionate or to risk in order to get a win done? Or are you just going to fight the way he did? I mean, I think the big criticism with him was that, you know, he was more like passionless Chad. I mean, I've never seen a guy have absolutely no expression.
He has no expression. He has nothing. I mean, he's even when he goes to the corner. I mean, he doesn't even have an expression when he lands a big shot or he gets hit. He's just a one-track kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Chad Dawson, and he was just like stone faced. Like they're serving chicken today, or they're serving turkey dinner tonight.
Maybe the rapture had something to do with it, Gable. Maybe he was expecting the rapture, and he figured, you know what? Zombies are going to come out of the ground, so I better start acting like a zombie. Hey, let's patch in some fight fans, though, that want to talk about this fight. Before we call in and patch in Urbano Antelion, who's got a big fight coming up with Bam Bam Rios, let's tap in. Let's see. Chris, you're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Chad Dawson thing, you know, with Bernard Hopkins. I think the thing with Chad, he doesn't really have the killer instinct. And I think being with Emmanuel Stewart, I think, you know, they're both going to get very frustrated with each other because Emmanuel's looking for, you know, a guy who can punch, and I don't think it's just not in Chad's character. I'll be honest with you. I did pick Chad to possibly beat Hopkins a few years ago, but, you know, it's just – the way he's fighting right now, he needs to be more aggressive in order to beat Hopkins. You know, throw some good combination at Hopkins, make Hopkins a little wary of what he wants to throw instead of.
He would
Hopkins
have to be busy with Bernard. You know, the same busy the way Calzaghe was.
You have to have a complete fight, and I haven't really seen at the top level a real complete fight. You know, actually, I take that back. I thought the Tarver fights were pretty complete. I didn't see a need for a rematch in that after that first one because you put it on him, and then I thought the second time he did the same thing, you know. But with Hopkins, I think you need to have a first and a second half, and I still think that Chad has got all the tools, he's got all the talent to get it done, and I honestly do believe there's a reason why, you know, Hopkins was like, I'd rather go after Pascal. He had no interest in getting the belt from Chad Dawson. He's
You're
like,
right.
I don't want to ruin another prospect. I'd rather not. You know, ruin Chad Dawson's career. And then Pascal gets the belt, and he's, you know, granted he beat Chad Dawson, but Chad looked very flat and kind of odd that night. And then he almost knocked out Pascal at the end. And, you know, all of a sudden it's, I'll fight Pascal. Although there's the other flip side. I mean, this is another reason why I question why HBO would demand this fight is Pascal sells a lot of tickets. He's got a big fan following, and there's a reason why Golden Boy didn't put up a fight as far as going back to Canada. They made a lot of money going up there. Whereas, you know, where do you fight Chad Dawson? Where does he sell tickets? What does he bring to the table other than he's a problem?
Hey, Pontiac, you know, Michigan. What are you talking about?
Wow.
I'm kind of thinking, like, what happens to Tavares Cloud? You know, where did he come in? You know, he's not getting any deals yet or any fights going on. He had a good fight against Glenn Johnson. I don't understand why they didn't have a box off between him and Dawson, and then one of that would face, you know, Hopkins, the one out of Hopkins and Pascal.
He actually has a fight coming up. I just can't remember who the opponent is. It's
Does he? Okay.
Yeah, but your point is absolutely taken.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But he's also a guy that doesn't sell a lot of tickets, but he's, you know, he's kind of very fan-friendly style. He's fighting Yusef Mack. I don't know if it's on TV, though, you know.
I don't think it is, Gabe. I think that is going to be off-televised.
But, you know, that's actually going to be a hell of a fight. It's going to be a very fun fight. Every fight that Tavares Cloud's in is to me, must-see TV. He's just an exciting guy, and I don't understand why. Granted, Hopkins is, you know, he's like a fine wine, and he's aging very well and doing very well. But HBO gives him a three-fight deal. Off of the first Pascal fight, and then Tavares Cloud, it's like, where is he? Why aren't they investing in him? I don't really understand it. And it is a guy that I would love to see him and Chad Dawson get it on. I'd love to see him and John Pascal get it on. You know, those are really interesting fights. Any fight to me with Cloud, who's, you know, he'll take a few to give a bunch. That's a guy that I want to see. He's kind of a rarity anymore. And to me, he's a guy that you could pass the torch from Glenn Johnson right over to Tavares Cloud as a fan-friendly fighter who's going to mix it up, kind of old school. And yet HBO just doesn't seem that interested in him. I don't really understand why. They probably wouldn't be able to tell you.
No, they wouldn't be able to tell you at all, you know? I mean, they're still looking for their matchmaker to hire. And give you the reason.
I just have a question if I could ask you guys. If you guys, I just read this today, but I wasn't sure if it was true. Is it true that Rafael Marquez is fighting Mike Oliver next week?
I haven't heard about that. I have not heard about that. Rafael Marquez?
You know, actually, no, that was I know that's originally on the schedule. I'm not sure if he's still on it.
Okay.
I'd have to double check it because, you know, I did hear about that. He was on the undercard. And then, you know, BoxRec has a different fighter up, but they have him for June 18th, Eusebio Osejo in Mexico. So I don't think he's on this. You were talking about he was going to be on the June 3rd Chavez card, but I don't think he's on that card anymore.
I'm looking. I don't see him on here.
Yeah. Now he's scheduled to fight somebody else in late June as opposed to last week. I remember originally he was on that card, but I'm pretty sure he isn't. Otherwise, they probably would have had him instead of Christy Martin at the media day yesterday for Sebastian Zibic.
Wow.
That was kind of funny. I mean, you know, more power to her for coming back from such a horrible experience and
Hell
of a story and everything. But they kept asking me, like, would you like to interview her? I don't cover women's boxing. I just don't. You know, sorry. You know, it's an interesting story, but I have no interest.
Oh,
in
you jerk.
I know. I'm sorry, but I just don't. You know, it would be kind of hypocritical. I don't cover prime female fighters, so why would I cover Christy Martin, you know? And again, good luck to her. I'm not trying to hate on her, but it's just, you know, I was there to see Zibic.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right.
All right, man, really quick, let's see if we can get a hold of Urbano really quick and conduct an interview with him and find out what is his thoughts about facing Bam Bam. There was talk originally of him getting in with Humberto Soto, who he had a great sensational fight with, and it was under the radar among a lot of casual fans, but us hardcore fans, man, we knew it was up, so we tuned in to watch it. Hopefully he answers. He's in training camp at the moment.
Hello?
Urbano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring. How you doing, brother?
Everything good, man. Can't complain, man. Just, you know, here I've been big, but resting out from my great workout this afternoon.
Who are you working out with? I mean, you sparring. What are the names of some of the sparring guys that are helping you out get prepared for this fight?
Well, there's some guys up here, Frankie Gomez. I'm sure you guys heard of him. Golden Boy has them. The rumors on sparring with Canelo Alvarez, so... So this is, again, I can't remember his name. One of Canelo's partners. I don't know. I'm not sure what his name is, though.
What happened with the Canelo? You weren't able to get in the ring and mix it up with them? Was that what happened there?
I don't know if they would want me to be saying, you know, what's going on with the training regimen, but he's up here training, you know. So I mean, I don't know if on anybody's toes, you know.
Well, I mean, you're not really with Golden Boy, so why not? I mean, what's going on? I mean, I think a lot of us, Urbano, you cannot open the door and not expect us to want you to walk through. Come on.
I didn't open the door. It's been open. I get that Abel kind of spilled the beans on that. So I don't know who he mentioned it to, and I've gotten asked that question already. So, I mean, you know, it's like, to be honest, you know, I haven't sparred him. But I mean, Bernard's partner mainly with Frankie Gomez and one of Canelo's partners.
Let me first of all, let me thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're done with your workout, and you were kind of rushing to get out of there. So introduce my co-host Gable Montoya. So big fight here for you, brother. You're getting.
Oh yeah, man. What can I say? You know, I'm just very thankful once again for an opportunity. You know, it's like you know, these opportunities don't come around, you know, all the time. So I've been very blessed to say, you know, I gave Soto a run for his money, and it didn't happen again with him. But you know, Top Rank and Bob Arum sit down and you know, decided to make the fight, and it's a tremendous fight for myself, for Brandon Rios, for the fans, and it's going to do very well.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of folks are kind of looking at Bam Bam as this monster. Monster and a guy in the ring. He's a big, he's a very big guy, you know, and he's a very aggressive, come forward. You know, Urbano, you've shown you could box, but it looks like now kind of more or less in this time of this year, you've been more of the pressure guy. You've been the guy that's kind of coming forward and looking and hounding down your opponent. does this make a good match in two guys coming forward, or does this make a match for you to reevaluate your fighting style and go back to how originally you had walked into the boxing scene?
No, not entirely. I don't think I don't have to change much, because, I mean, the reason me coming out forward so aggressive with Soto was because that's what I had to do. And I think it's going to be a lot easier fight than the Soto fight, to be honest with you. Because why? Because, I mean, it's not a secret that, I mean, the people that can be more complicated are the boxers, you know, like the Miguel Acosta, like the Soto, the ones that move around. And Brandon is in the state, he's in the state to get hit. And trust me, he's not going to break me down like he's breaking down Peterson, like he broke down like these other fighters. I'm not going to buckle. I'm not. I'm literally in there, you know. I'm willing to give my life up. That's how the heart I have and the mentality I have. I'm not going to break. I'm really not. And I mean, if he's going to be there, you know, to get hit, just as well, he's going to be there to take him. So I think it's going to be a little easier fight than the Soto fight, to be honest with you. So I'm not too worried about it. And yet he's a monster. But then again, he's fighting these guys, like, you know, not taking anything away from Peterson, but he just didn't give any resistance to the pressure that Brandon Rios. He just pretty much walked through him. He just didn't have the power to keep him away. And Miguel Lacosta, you know, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's the guy that first gave me my first loss. But you know, just he was just too small for Brandon Rios and maybe not strong enough. I mean, he hurt Brandon Rios on some occasions during the fight, but just didn't, you know, come forward with anything else. But it just in for something a little different this time with myself. I'm telling you, he's not going to break me like he's breaking everybody else. He's not going to be the monster he thinks he is with me.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel.
Hey, how you doing, Urbano? Thanks for coming on.
Everything great, Gabriel. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I was there ringside for your fight with Soto, which was a hell of a fight. You know, I was kind of hoping to see that rematch. But it seemed like, you know, he, with his boxing skills and everything, he did give you some trouble, you know, in that fight. He was able to kind of move around from you, and it was classic brawler versus boxer. When you look at this fight, do you just kind of throw that fight out the window? Is it just a completely different style, and so we shouldn't even look into that fight? Is okay, well, he lost that fight, and so now we're fighting a young guy, a strong guy. Do we even bother looking at those fights? And because this is, to me, kind of brawler versus brawler in a sense.
So right.
Do you expect that kind of hard, like, fight of the year kind of fight with him?
It's like, man, well, there's going to be, you know, two trains coming toward each other on the same track, you know, and it's just a matter of who sacrificed a little more, who came in more prepared, who made the weight easier. I mean, those are the things that are going to probably determine this fight. And I mean, the Soto fight, you can't completely throw it out the window, because, I mean, I went through some obstacles that I hadn't been through before. And you know, I went through them and gave him, like, just like you said, you know, a hell of a fight. And with Brandon Rios, it just gave me that extra confidence, you know. Like, to be honest with you, and I really haven't told many people this, but there was a moment in there against the Soto fight that, I mean, because some of the obstacles, for example, I couldn't breathe at all from the probably first or second round. I don't remember what round it is, because my nose was just jacked up. I couldn't breathe at all. And I couldn't take water in the corner because I wasn't breathing. I had to breathe through my mouth. So when I would take water, I had to spit the water out or drink it right away because I just couldn't hold it because I had to breathe. And I got surgery right after the fight. And you know, hopefully that's going to, you know, benefit me in this coming fight. And you know, the good thing about it is that I have enough time to recover from the surgery and all that. So it's going to be a little different to be able to breathe in there. But you can't, I mean, I guess, yeah, they're just two different styles than a Soto fight, to which you're going to go heads up, you know, and it's going to be something great to watch, you know. Nobody wants to miss this fight, man. It's going to be something else.
How many times can you go to the well like that, though, with fights that are just flat-out wars? You know, your style kind of dictates that you're going to take some shots in order to give your shots. And also, what is it like knowing that you're going to go in there and this is probably going to be a 12-round war? How do you mentally prepare for that?
You know what? It's just something you don't prepare for. It's just something that's just in me, you know? It's like, just my style. I the only way I could prepare is just coming in shape and the best shape that I can to you know, to get me through those moments. And I just, it's just something that's kind of unexplainable to me, man. I was just born with that anger, you know, to want to continue and want to break the other guy down. It's just something that I was born with. It's just something you just don't prepare with for it. And there's a lot of fighters that just really never get tested, like, you know, in some fights. Like, and Brandon Rios, I don't think he's ever been really tested. He's never been, he's saying he's, you know, he's ready for a war, but I don't think he's really been in a war to say where he's in this fight, he's in a question of whether he wants to continue or not. And I've been through them wars, and he said he's ready for it, so we'll just wait and see if he really is.
That's I was just off of your corner for that fight with Soto, and I have to tell you, I was in awe, dude. I mean, you were bleeding, you were taking shots, you were giving shots, and every time, you know, you seemed to come back to that corner, you never looked discouraged to me. You were just kind of like, you'd raise your hand and then go back to the corner and do your thing and go right back out. And just that is just something you got to be born with, because, you know, I don't know where you get it from.
And I'm not going to lie to you. There was this moment, I don't know what round it was, but it was maybe like the 7th, 8th round around there, where I questioned it. I mean, after the cut, I was just in so much pain because of my nose, man. I'm telling you, my nose was like really jacked up. And, you know, some fighters are just willing to, you know, to just give up, you know, and call it quits. And I'm not going to lie, you know, I did question, like, you know, I just wanted an excuse that I wanted the, you know, the referee to check it, stop it because of the cut, you know, or the blood's getting in my, whatever it is. But then came the moment where, I mean, it was just like within a minute that I had them thought to, you know, maybe around. And then came the point where he took me to the doctor to actually see the cut. And he asked me, do you want to continue? I was like, hell yeah, I was ready to go, you know. So I mean, I never thought I would ever go through, you know, that type of emotion in a fight to really question, because I had never ever questioned myself before. So it just gave me that little extra edge, I think, that over Brandon Rios, that I've been there. And he's never been where I'm going to think where he's going to go in this fight. And I've been there, and I have no doubt that I'm going to come out on top on this one.
Is that why you feel a little bit more confident with this fight with Brandon Rios? I mean, if you didn't go through that, do you think you would be as confident as you're sounding right now here with Brandon?
You know what? I wouldn't have the doubt, because you just didn't. Because when you don't live, you don't know any better. You just never know until you actually go through it. And I had, like I'm telling you, I had never questioned myself, and I never thought I would. And then this fight, and I was actually supposed to fight Brandon Rios back maybe about a year and a half, about a year ago or something like that, and it didn't happen because he got cut or whatnot. And I'm saying he had a better chance back then than me. Why? Because, you know, I was just getting acquainted with my new trainer. I was just getting used to the new training regimen we're doing. And now, you know, I'm very well comfortable with my new trainer. I'm happier than ever. And things are just working out perfect, and it's just another confidence booster for myself. And yeah, going through the sort of fight, going through the emotion through that hard fight, it's just adding up to me. And I just don't see how he has an edge on this fight. Maybe a little stronger or whatever, but it's something we're going to be able to deal with. And he's never been through where he's never been through where I'm going to take him in this fight.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, this fight was so violent and brutal. It was a fight that most fight fans, I mean, that fight, I text you immediately after I spoke to you the following day how great that fight was, you know. But immediately after that fight, a lot of fight fans were in question of, okay, was this the best that Urbano has given us, and is this the last of what he's going to give us, you know, because it was almost like you dug so deep. And we've seen this times and times before happen to fighters where they end up leaving a part of themselves in that ring. Is after that, did you feel any different? Did you feel that there was an exhaustion about yourself, you know, where, you know what, it was such a great fight. Could I perform again if I need to, with another fighter in a particular manner. I mean, Brandon Rios to me seems like a guy that he may bring out that beast that we saw against Humberto Soto. What do you say about these fans that say you can't do it again, though?
I mean, you know, I was ready to do it again right after with Soto again, you know, and would I have been able to give an exact same performance like I did last time? I don't know. We should wait and see. Did I leave something in the ring? I don't know. Is that something I can't answer? I don't feel like I did. I still feel the same. If anything, that fight, people just sometimes see the fight and they don't really see things that go, you know, beyond the fight. For example, like leading up to the fight, during the fight, me not being able to breathe, like a lot of obstacles that a fighter goes through during a fight, and nobody ever nobody ever hears about them. And I'm telling you, that fight to me, it was just like so fast. I just felt like I wasn't thinking, and I just went out there and just brawled. That's all I did. Why? Because I'm just telling you, I was going to the corner and I couldn't breathe. And you know, I was get the mouthpiece out. It was just pressure. Where I wasn't really relaxing there. I just went out there and brawled. That's what I did. And you know, it's like, I don't know. This fight, I'm telling you, just things are gonna be a little different, a little better in my sense. Where, you know, he's gonna go in there and think he's the stronger of the two, and I've never thought I was never the stronger of the two in my fight, you know. So
uh-huh.
So it's just gonna be a question of you know, yeah, and it's not a secret that I get caught with that right uppercut, you know. So let him throw it, but you know, it ain't a secret that he gets caught with left hook and straight right hand. Of course, I hurt him with straight punches, and you know, Brandon Rios backed out for a couple of things. Acosta never came forward, so why? Because he was I remember fighting Acosta. He was just so small. He wasn't strong enough, and I'm telling you, he just in for a night, man. I mean, I keep saying that because he keeps asking for a war, you know. But it's like, how could you ask for something you've never been in, you know? It's like, and actually be ready. He's not ready for what's gonna come that night to him.
You think, in a sense, I mean, you've been around for a long time, and you may not want to even answer this question, but do you think in some ways your best years have been kind of squandered by Top Rank, that you should have gotten bigger fights than this, you know, or like this years ago?
You know what? I could say that I'm very thankful that things are happening now. Why? Because I'm not in a physical aspect, but just I'm just more mentally prepared for it. And you know what? To be honest with you, And I've told many, you know, some of my closest friends is that I was kind of happy that the Miguel Acosta fight happened the way it did. I am thankful that I was put on my ass and you know, I'm not going to say losing the fight was the best thing that had happened to me, but I wasn't ready to be in a world champion. God knows what would have happened. Maybe I would have been a Brandon Rios, you know, pretty ignorant, you know, thinking I was a badass, a monster. And that's kind of the direction I was headed in. And it was just a big reality check to me. Where, you know, I'm still in, you know, in soul search mode, dude. I've been looking for I was kind of a miserable human being. You know, I would go to the gym, just do the work, because it was the job to me. That's what it was. And now I'm telling you, I'm appreciating everything that's coming now. I really appreciate it, and I could honestly say that I'm the happiest person doing what I'm doing right now. And I never felt this happiness before in my life. Like I'm telling you, I was a pretty miserable human being. You know, I just never really smiled, never cracked a laugh. I mean, very few times that people would see me smile. It was just something, I don't know what it was. And I ever since that fight, you know, I decided to make a lot of change. I changed trainers. I changed location. Changed address. You went to the Philippines, Pacquiao. I mean, came up here with Abel and man, I found something that I craved for so long that I never thought I would ever find it, you know, and that's just happiness, man, and these opportunities keep happening. Why? Because I'm just a happiest person. I love what I do, and like they say, you know, when you work hard, you know, the luckier I get when I work hard, and that just seems to be the situation here, that all these great opportunities keep happening, and no, I don't blame Top Rank that I should have been moved move sooner, this and that. I don't know what would have been in my life, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. Would everything, my whole journey, I wouldn't trade it. If I had the opportunity to be a champion at 24, 23, 24, 25, I wouldn't trade it for where I'm at now. I really wouldn't. Because I'm that happy with myself and with my career and my life right now overall.
What's your assessment of Brandon Rios? What's your take on him?
Well, I'm telling you, man. Like, some people just, that guy, Eli Sketchback, where it just keeps having him and instigating things that I don't like him, you know. And they could think what they want. And I've told you guys before on this show that the only thing I've ever said about Brandon Rios, I mean, he's a tough fighter. I give him a lot of credit. You know, has a lot of heart, a lot of balls. I just wouldn't be able to hang around him. It just didn't seem like the person I would want to hang around. I wouldn't want to have him as a friend. He just seems kind of a, you know, I wouldn't get along with him. That's just it. We would butt heads too much. And he's not going to, you know, be a beast around me. You don't want to try to hit me and stuff. Oh, no, that's not going to happen.
how do you prepare for a guy that has not just an onslaught in the ring, but a verbal onslaught? You know, this guy, I mean, Brandon is by far one of my favorite characters, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
How do you prepare yourself for that? I mean, because to me, Brandon is a street kid where if he doesn't like you, and he's just going to say what's exactly how he feels about you.
And that's very respectable, you know? I respect that. The only thing I'm saying is, like, I mean, you know, dude, add another couple more words to your vocabulary besides the word fuck, you know what I mean? That's the only thing I got to say about that. But he's entertaining for sure. He's, I mean, what can I say about him? You know, he draws attention, and you know what? He backs it up. That's the good thing about it. You know, he just doesn't talk and doesn't do nothing about it. He backs up, you know, what he said. But I'm just telling you, I wouldn't be able to hang around him. That's just it.
Absolutely.
But he's entertaining for sure.
How about Canelo? What's your assessment of him? Would you be able to hang out with him?
He's a cool guy, you know. It's like he's been here for several weeks now, and he's a hard working guy, you know. It's like you get some guys that with a lot of talent, and you know, they kind of slack off in the gym. And I gotta say that he's a hard worker. He's here day in and day out, putting in work, sparring. He's been getting good sparring up here with Gennady Golovkin, and among others. And I mean, he's getting ready, man. He's still young, you know, and he's a young boxer, world champion already, but. I mean, he's got a lot of room to grow still, but he's a great person.
All right, brother. Well, I'm going to let you go unless Gable's got some more questions for you.
I was actually just curious. You were saying you're sparring with one of Canelo's sparring partners. Is it Gennady Golovkin? Is it the European middleweight? Or is it somebody else?
No, he's a lighter guy. He probably fights at 126, 130 around there or something.
Why
like that.
Why is he sparring such smaller guys?
No, that's not his sparring partner. He has other guys here. He's been sparring with that WBA champion, Gennady Golovkin. He's a 160-pounder.
Okay.
They just have him here. I guess he's going to fight that same night that he did, but he's not sparring with smaller guys. He's getting good work up here.
Well, that's good.
Well, thank you so much, Urbano, and good luck to you, man, and I can't wait for the fight. I think it's going to be a fight of the year candidate. It's kind of a can't-miss action fight. And I wish you all the luck, man.
Hey,
I appreciate it, man. And it's been great. And I really can't wait for it either, man. It's crazy at the time, but I really can't wait. And looking forward to it.
It's going to be electrifying, man. I'm telling you, a Home Depot Center in Carson, California. Hey, I look forward to it. And I'm going to be rooting for both of you guys since I'm a fan of both of you guys, Urbano. Hey, thanks again, brother,
for
calling in.
Man, I've always said it. Like, you know, some people always say, oh, you know, you always pray that you win. Just pray that we both come out good and sane and good health, man. That's all you could ask for. And just ask for a great fight, you know. That's all you could, you know, you expect from a fight. And it's going to happen this night. And boxing fans out there, even if you're not a boxing fan, man, they're tuning in for this fight, man. It's going to be out of this world, for sure.
Absolutely, brother. Again, man, thank you very much for calling in.
Anytime, man. I always appreciate chit-chatting with you guys.
All right, man. Take care.
I'm going to call you on a private number. All right. All right, man. Well, there you go. You know, it was Timothy Bradley giving me a call. He says he's ready for us. He wants to talk. He wants to open up. He wants to let us know what the real deal is, you know? Let's call him in really quick. I don't know. There's something. I don't know if the listeners are able to hear your phone, Gabe. It's breaking up really bad. I haven't been able to hear anything you're really saying. Just to let you know, just to give you out that note really quick. But
can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you a lot better. So let's call in Mr. Timothy Bradley, the Desert Storm, one of my favorite fighters here that always comes on leaving the ring, never shies away on speaking to myself and Gabe Montoya. Yo, Timmy, you there, brother?
I'm right here, man. What's happening?
What's good, man? How you been doing, brother?
Oh, man, I've been all right, man. I've been laying low, man, but now I'm speaking out.
I know you've been laying low, but have you been laying low because of Amir Khan, man? That's what a lot of folks want to know.
Man, y'all better stop playing with me. Ain't nobody scared of no dang Amir Khan, man. You know this boxing game is a business, man.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, Timmy, because the thing is that me and Gable were talking about this, even when people were calling in and saying, yo, like, what's up with, you know, Mr. Bradley doesn't want to get in the ring. He's turning down this X amount. And we really stressed because, and I don't know if this is what's going on truly with you, but we talked about, look, you had your what had happened with Devon Alexander. You're looking at it now with the business. You're like, look, it's maybe a little too soon to do this. Let's hold off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you got HBO now dumping even more money. What's really going on with you? I mean, is the fight going to happen? Are you holding off for a particular reason? Are you looking to do it this year or the next year?
Well, I'm looking to do it probably in maybe the end of the year or possibly next year. I still think the fight is still too premature. You know, there's a lot of other things, you know, that plays into this as well. You know, the fact that, you know, I'm contracted with my promoter to fight a fight by June 30th, you know, and July 23rd is way beyond June 30th, bro. You know, that's another factor that's playing into this and my decision not to fight right now. As far as the HBO or whatever, see how my business is all out. All of my business is out for everybody to see, right? But you don't see no kind of business out for Amir Khan, you know? How much money is Amir Khan making? Is it a 50-50 split? Is Amir Khan making this and making that? See, and then they tell me that, he's the bigger draw. He's the bigger draw. I said, where? In England?
Yeah.
I said, England? I said, no. I said, you know, I walk around everywhere I go. Everybody's all right. Chat, when you get in the ring? Who are you going to fight next? And I say, we're working on Amir Khan. Who? Amir Khan? Who is that? Where is he from? Who is that? Where is he from? You know, and I'm like, he's from England, and he's an England champion. So, I mean, everywhere I go, I mean, he's not more popular than I am over here, you know. So, the bigger draw, I don't think so, man. Maybe in this country, you know, but not here. Not here, not no way.
What does a lockdown with HBO have with you? I mean, do they respect the fact that that you're turning down the money that's being offered? And if so, are they able to hold off with you and then not lash at you after when you're ready to do the fight?
I don't know. You know, I don't know the legal stuff. I really don't know what's going to go on with that legal stuff. I'm not sure what's happening with that. So I can't tell you, you know, what's up with HBO. HBO know that, you know, I love the fight, you know, and I love the fight on HBO, you know. They know that, you know, that it's, at the end of the day, this business is my choice to get in there and fight. So, you know, I don't think I should be penalized in any way for not taking this fight. You know, there should be options, you know what I'm saying? There should be options. I know I said that, yeah, I want to fight Amir Khan, I wanted this, I did. You know, that was coming off of the Devin Alexander fight, you know, all hyped up, you know, wanting to fight the best, wanting this, wanting that, you know, and I got, you know, one of the best managers in the game, Cameron Duncan, you know, saying, hey, Tim, slow down, Tim, you know, slow down, you know. You know, so, you know, let me do my job, you know.
Right.
Okay, all right, I understand, you know, and it boils down to this. for $1.2 million, I can fight somebody, you know, somebody in the top 10, somebody for $1.2 million on HBO. Okay? All right? They gave Hernandez, Bernardo Hernandez for $1.2 million or $1.3 or whatever.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, can a brother get a break? I've been fighting nothing but top quality opposition. You know, I'm just like, hey, you know, this is a business. You know, because don't seem like a lot of people, you know, I'm not saying you guys, but I know a lot of people don't really appreciate, you know, my resume and what I've done. You know, I fought three undefeated opponents, you know, my last three fights. You know, you ain't done nothing like that. You know, I mean, no other fighters doing anything like that besides the Super Six. You know, these guys are all undefeated. Majority of them were, you know, in the Super Six.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I'm like, hey, man, you know what? You know what? You're all right. Wow, you smart. You smart. You know, you smart, Cam. Just, you know, wow. All right. Yeah. So they come to me. You know, go ahead.
What is the relationship with you and Gary Shaw now? I mean, is the contract running out? Is there's rumors that is a possibility that you may renew the contract? What are the particulars happening between you and your promoter Gary Shaw at this moment?
I just want to be promoted, man. That's what it boils down to, man. I just want to be promoted like a champion. You know, I want to be promoted. I want to be. You know, I want to build the Bradley name, you know, the Bradley brand, you know. Honestly, dude, you know, yeah, I've gotten three world champions. You can say how much he's given me, how much he's done this, that I'm a spoiled brat this and that I'm this. Dude, he always make promises that he can't keep, you know what I'm saying? He always make promises, oh, if you win this fight, you don't know what's going to happen next. Oh, if you win this fight, ooh, we got something in store for you. We got something in store for you. And then at the end of the fight, it's like, who am I fighting? You know, who's next? Who's next? Well, things didn't work out like it should have been, you know. Promised me the world and never delivered. Never delivered, you know. Why did I fight one time against Carlos Abreu last year? Wasn't my fault. I was ready to go.
Right,
what
right.
happened? There's no freaking plan, man. There's no freaking plan. You know, I like Gary Shaw as a person. You know, Gary Shaw, we cool. We all cool. You know what I'm saying? But the business side, you know, I haven't really stood out and said anything. I've always said yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, you know, on the business side of things. But, you know, now, you know, I feel and I know that I'm in a good position. I'm in a great position, so I need to make the best choices I possibly can, you know, so I don't be one of those fighters that leaves this game with nothing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Gable Montoya. Gable, you got any questions for Timothy Bradley, brother?
Yeah, I got a lot of questions for Tim. How you doing, Tim? Welcome to the show.
Hey, what you got?
I'm curious. Is there a clause in your current contract that says if you fight another fight for Gary Shaw that there's an extension and that your the promotional contract gets extended because of that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know what the logistics are. Hold on one second, sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, where was I at? In the contract, I don't know the whole legal part in the contract. All I know is that, you know, I'm supposed to fight for $1.2 million against an opponent. You know, the rematch with Devin Alexander didn't exist because HBO didn't want to buy it. But, you know, they're supposed to give me $1.2 million for an opponent that they agree on, HBO agree on, and myself agree on, you know, for my next fight. You know, they haven't given me any options whatsoever. The only thing that they given me was Amir Khan. They threw Amir Khan at me and threw me $200,000 extra. I'm like, hey, here. Well, you know, this is more than 1.2. Well, you need to fight Amir. You need to fight Amir. And I'm just like, okay, where's my options at, man? There's no options. There's no nothing. You know. So I mean, that's what it says. And you know what? After I fight Amir, Gary still gets the first and the last to respond to any offers.
But if you don't fight, if you don't fight for him or don't fight Khan, then
after I fight Amir, I'm clean slate. I'm clean slate after I fight Amir. It's not like that.
Right.
You know, he still has the option for me. Go ahead.
If there's a sense, though, you know, this is a – someone could argue, and Gary has, and I have talked about this, that this is – sure, there should be other options, but that this is the best option. You know, he's offering you an 80-20 split. There's a lot of money on the table, 50% of the pay-per-view in the U.K. And I, personally, I think you beat Amir Khan. Why not just take the money, win the fight, and then go into free agency? Is it really just come down to that if you do take this fight, you're stuck – with Gary Shaw as a promoter, and you don't want to be with him anymore?
That's a possibility. That's a possibility because they're gonna do everything they can to keep me. Everybody know my situation. A lot of people say that's great money. That's great money. That's a whole lot, man. At the end of the day, it's still really risky, and. At the end of the day, let's say I lose the fight. What happens then?
Right.
You know, I'm out of the sweepstakes for a big, huge, major fight with one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. You know, either Mayweather, because Mayweather's going through some money real soon, or Manny Pacquiao.
Is that why there is the importance of holding off here, Tim? It really. Is that the logistics of it? Is that you're in the sweepstakes? You're looking at that, and you're like, "Look, if I hold off long enough, forget Amir Khan. I can get the possibility of being a free agent, negotiating with Top Rank or Golden Boy, and getting these big mega fights that I've been looking for a while."
I mean, that's something to think about. You know, I mean, that's a lot to think about. You know, but the thing is that my promoter needs to deliver this fight by June 30th. You know, I'm just holding on to that, man. You know, he needs to deliver by June 30th. I've always had regulations. You know, they got regulations. You know, I've given them a month extension on my contract, you know, because my contract was up May 10th. So, hey, deliver. You know, deliver. July 23rd is way outside of my contract agreement that I have with you, you know, and that's the bottom line. So, deliver me a fight by June 30th, you know, and we won't have problems. You'll have your fight. So, that's pretty much it, man. That's pretty much it. So, that's pretty much what I'm holding on to, man. You know, the whole possibility of fighting, you know, one of the best fighters in the world, that's always out there. That's always in my head, man. You know, that's always in my head. You know, Devin Alexander didn't do anything for my career, mm-hmm. and by beating Amir, I honestly feel it's not going to do anything for me. It's not going to do anything for me. I'm serious.
So when you go say deliver by June 29th, what exactly are you expecting him to deliver? An opponent out of a top, 2010 at a fight, but at $1.2 million, is that what you want from him or more?
There you go. $1.2 million. Give me an opponent, $1.2 million. Let's
but not an Amir Khan opponent. That's what you're saying. I don't want Amir Khan. Just give me somebody else, but not Amir Khan for this moment right now because the money's not right.
Right. That Amir Khan, when we do fight, it's going to be so much more money involved in. You know, I've already got shut out. I fought Devin Alexander. He was number two at that given time. Number two fighting division, I fought him for $1.1 million. You know, at that given time, it was hyped up, be this, be that, and then live up to his expectations. You know, the fight was too premature. You know, I feel the same way about this fight. I think it's still too premature, man.
Right.
You know, like everybody said, yeah, I feel that you can beat Amir Khan. I feel that I can beat him too. You know, like I told you, I can beat Devin. I can beat Amir Khan. I feel that I can beat him, man. In God's will, I feel like I can beat him. I honestly do. I seen his last fight. I said, oh, wow, okay. I can get away from that. Okay, yeah, he has something with guys that use good defense, footwork. You know, I got faster hands than this guy. I throw more combinations. You know, I can apply the pressure like Madonna did. I mean, there's so many angles I can look at this fight and be like, you know what, I could beat this guy.
Right.
You know, there's been many days where I sit down and say, you know what, man, you know what, I should just take this fight. I should just take this fight and bow down to my promoters and bow down to everybody and just take this fight. But then at the, and then there's another part of me saying, you know what? Nah, I'm sick of doing that. You know what I'm saying? I'm sick of doing that. You know, these guys don't really care about me. You know, boxing is no longer a sport. It's a business. You know, and I start thinking business-minded. You know, I start thinking about longevity. I start thinking about my career as a whole and where I came from. You know, where I began and where I don't want to go back to. You know, I start thinking about all these things playing a factor, man. They play the factor in my decision not to do it. You know, Tim, you've been doing your job. You've been doing your job. You've been winning. But, hey, it's time for your promoter to probably step up and promote you right, you know, promote you like a champion. You know, Devin Alexander was rolling around in the limo, dude, out there in Detroit, and I'm rolling around in a freaking van, you know. I'm in a van, dude. Come on. Promote me. Promote me, man. Show me Trump, bro. You know, tell me my work. That's, I mean, you know, fight me in better arenas. Fight me in better places, man, you know. You know,
right.
I feel like all along my promoter just been collecting the paycheck, bro.
You mean to tell me you don't want to go to Pontiac, Michigan again?
Man, they even brought that up. That's where the fight be. They even brought that up again. Well, we might have the fight in Pontiac, Michigan again. I said, what? Are you serious? You know, they go anywhere the money's at, they don't want no money coming out their pocket.
Right.
You know, anywhere the money's at, that's where they going. It don't matter. Well, shit, well, we're going to have it over here because they paying, you know, $800,000 for a site fee. Hey, shucks. A lot of money, you know, in the middle of nowhere in Omaha, Nebraska somewhere, you know, I mean, anywhere.
Right.
It's just like, dude, come on.
You know, looking at last week, there was that Golden Boy promotion with Pascal Hopkins, and then there was Gary Shaw fighter Chad Dawson on the undercard. And, you know, all week long I saw articles. I did one on Hopkins. People wrote about Pascal. Nobody wrote anything about Dawson. There wasn't a conference call. There really wasn't a lot of promotion for him. And then considering
Hello?
All that's going on.
Gabe, your phone's breaking up really bad, brother.
Hey,
yeah,
it wasn't enough. Who is Chad Dawson? I'm like, there wasn't nothing.
Can you hear me now?
You're right about that. It wasn't nothing. It wasn't nothing. Come on. Come on, man.
So with everything that's going on with the two of you, and then considering how that promotion's going, you know, how that promotion went last week, do you just feel that you're going to be treated like the B side, and that you're not going to have a promoter that's going to fight for you for, you know, the clubs, the ring size, the location, all those little things that kind of go into making a fair fight?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. See, man, you read between the lines, bro. You know, I mean, that's great. You know, I honestly feel that way. You know, Golden Boy's putting on a fight. One, I don't know who the judge is gonna be. Number two, location, they're talking about Vegas. Okay, cool. Where's my promoter at in this? Where's he at in this? You know, is he gonna do anything as far as marketing? Golden Boy's gonna do everything with marketing. They're gonna do everything to pump this fight.
Right, they're
gonna
market their fighter and make it seem like you're an opponent. Right.
I'm the opponent, bro. I'm the opponent. I'm not the champion.
Right,
I'm the opponent.
Right.
I'm the opponent champion. That's what I am. That's a new word. Opponent champion. The number one guy, and I'm the opponent. Because they say that. He brings people to the seats in the stands. I was out there when he fought against Madonna. And those seats were
nobody there,
cool, bro.
Right.
It was, dude, I was there, dude. I was there. You know what I'm saying? I was there. I seen it. I was like, man, these stands
like
are not full.
5,000 people or something like that. And who knows how many of those were paid.
I honestly don't even think it was that many people in there, 5,000 people, man. I was there. I seen it live. I went to the Nero fight. You know, over there, and the stands was pretty packed. It was a lot of people, man. A lot of people in there.
What about the fans, though, Timothy? What about the fans that have been with you that are really honestly have been turned off by you not accepting this fight or not understanding the business part of boxing? You know, I mean, you got your fans that are just old school. They're saying, look, forget the money. Just get in and fight. I mean, what's the problem? problem here. You have one guy saying, I'll fight you, and you've said it before, I want to fight him. Now it's both in agreement. Just get in there. Do you worry about losing the fans that you do have in making these decisions?
No, I don't worry about that. I don't worry about that. You know why? Because once I fight again and I start winning, they're gonna be back on the team, man. I ain't worried about that. I'm not worried about, you know, the boxing fans and they know, you know, the true boxing fans know exactly how the business is operated, you know, and they know that I pretty much fight the best, and I have been fighting the best. And they know that, you know, I'm gonna fight Amir Khan. And when I do, it's gonna be one hell of a fight, and I'm gonna be victorious at the end of the day. Regardless of if it's not at the time and that they want it to be, or everybody wanted it to be, you know, like I said, Alexander fight was too soon. This fight is too soon too. This fight is way too soon, man. Way too soon, guys. I said it with the Alexander fight too. You know, and I said, well, I'm not gonna make that mistake again. I'm not gonna do that again. You know, coming off of that high from, you know, beating Alexander and everything and, you know, getting out there and calling Khan out and all that stuff, you know, yeah, I might make myself look like an idiot or whatever, but at the end of the day, after I came down and really thought about it and really started thinking, went over my contract and stuff, and I was like, whoa, okay, all right.
I think I put my foot in my mouth here for a moment.
Exactly. So, you know, when the fight, when we do fight, because the fight is going to happen, either at 40 or 47, the fight will happen, you know, then, hey, all the fans will see what I've been talking about all along, you know, so.
You know, one thing I think, you know, and Gary is going to be on later on in the show, like 6:45. And we talked about loyalty, you know, and he says today's fighters aren't as loyal. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, at the end of the day, like you've said several times, this is a business. And is it more a sense of Thompson and Gary have had a chance to build you up? You've only fought like three times in your hometown. And I've been at those fights. I mean, you know, the Agua Caliente, where it's not sold out. You haven't really been built into a draw. Does loyalty play a factor, or is it just that a fighter has a very short shelf life and you've got to make some money at some point?
That's my promoter job, man. My promoter job is to promote the fighter, man, and get his name out there. That's what the promoter's for.
Right.
Not my job.
Yeah.
You know, my job is in there to fight, take care of business, and continue on to win, you know. That's my job, and I'm doing my job. You know, the job is the job of the promoter to promote the fight. You know, if we're gonna do a fight, let's do a big you know, man, I got so many ideas, man. I could be a promoter, you know what I'm saying? Let's do a big rally, you know, downtown, you know, in the hometown of a young kid, and rally all the people up, you know, and have, you know, close off the streets, you know what I'm saying? Make some noise out there. Bring the fighters together, you know. Bring the fighters together out there so the fans can see, so the people can see the fighters, you know. I mean, see the two fighters, you know, and pump the fight up. You know, get those tickets sold, you know. Get them billboards out there. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways, but you don't want to spend no money, man. Like I told you, Devin was riding in the limo and I was riding in the van. He don't want to spend no money.
Wow.
He don't want to spend any money, man, you know. And when you gotta put in your contract that you got to fly first class to a world championship fight, that's stupid, man. That should be automatic, man, you know. You gotta I have to drive to Los Angeles. I can't even fly out of my hometown here in Palm Springs. I gotta drive to Los Angeles. Come on, dude, that's just cheap, man. You know, my promoter needs to do his job, man. In his moment, he gonna get on the show. I promoted him. I brought him out of the lumber yard. You know what? I had more fans in the yummer yard than I do have now. You know, when I was fighting back then, when I was fighting the Corona. You know, so. What are you talking about? It's your job to promote me.
Absolutely.
For you, the options that were laid out, that should have been laid out, were Maidana, Berto. Obviously, he lost, but, you know, it was Khan or a rematch with Alexander, and obviously HBO didn't want that fight. Out of those guys, I mean, where do you think, you know, in terms of building it up and making this fight bigger with Khan, what direction would you want to go in? There's also Zab Judah that's out there.
Uh-huh.
Well, who would you like to
Zab
fight?
Judah. There's Zab Judah. There's Madonna. I would really love to fight Madonna, man. I would love to fight Madonna. You know, I think that is a great entertaining fight. I think Madonna, he's a very rugged guy, comes to fight, you know, and that's a guy that'll make me look good, you know. And you know, I've been fighting none but top quality guys, man, top quality, you know. And a majority of the fighters has been black. To be honest with you, they've been black fighters, you
right.
know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys know boxing, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, they don't. I mean, it's just, man. I'm just being honest. And brothers don't. They don't support the brothers, man. They just don't. You know, they might watch you on TV. They don't come out to the show, though. They won't come out to the show. So
your last seven fights, you fought five or six black guys and Louis Abreu. That's true.
Hey, man, I don't mean to, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not a racial thing, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean? That's, if anybody knows boxing, you know, the Latin fighters, they bring a lot of people out, you know what I'm saying? Especially if you're good. You know, Carnelo, how many people did he draw? He drew like 11,000 or 12,000 at this little place out there when he fought against Hatton. That is ridiculous, man.
And don't you think, in terms of just style, they kind of match you with a lot of guys like Kendall Holt's a mover, Edner Cherry moves, Junior Witter moves, Lamont Peterson, same thing, Devin Alexander moves a lot. Shouldn't they put you in with a guy like Maidana that would complement your style better, a pressure guy,
yeah.
with a pressure guy, and it would be explosive?
Pressure guy, throws a lot of punches, leaves himself exposed. I'll be able to counter and crap out of him, move, you know, use that jab, stick him, move, you know, that type of fight, you know. So a fight that I have to dig down deep because he's going to continue to come. You know, I'm going to get super tired from moving around all the time trying to get away from them big shots. I mean, it's a gutsy fight. It's a hard fight, man. You know, it's a tough fight, you know. But, you know, I think that I'm seasoned enough. I honestly think I'm seasoned enough to win that fight.
Yeah, I would definitely love to see that fight there with you and Madonna. You know, do you think that just HBO is just so hung over on this fight that they don't see any potential fights there for you to even try to offer to one point? I mean, like Zab Judas would be a great fight. Eric Morales had a pretty good run with Madonna. I mean, you know, he's still out there. He's a very huge name, a big draw. These are names that obviously could be thrown on the table. And do you think that your promoter has thrown any of these names or more or less has just kind of walked over to the corner and allowed HBO and everybody else be the promoter of your career at this moment?
Man, you know, I heard a lot through the grapevine, man. And he's just saying, you know, I heard from if you don't take this fight, you're not going to fight on HBO again. I'm like, wow. Really, you know?
Didn't they tell you that before with Devin Alexander?
You know how it goes, dude. You know how this business goes, man.
Right.
Oh, well, you're not gonna fight again if you don't take this fight. Like you're like forced into it, man. You're forced into taking these fights, you know. And it's like hey, like how do some fighters just get to fight anybody they want? You know what I'm saying? The promoter's able to put in front of them and, you know, and they grant them it and then they end up knocking them out and looking all spectacular and everything. And then when they get in there and fight somebody that's no joke, they end up losing. You know, it's just like, wow, okay, all right. Well, you know, I'm all about fighting the best. You know, I got a few names on my radar right now that I would love to get in the ring with. You know, I feel that, you know, I'm at the right time to face these guys, you know. I mean, there's a guy out there that keep calling my name, you know. He keeps saying my name, and I'm like, hey, all right now, you know. You know, I'm not,
let's,
you know.
Let's start June, in June, late June here, Gary Shaw's got to deliver something here. What if it's not delivered? Then what, Tim?
Then,
what do we go for?
I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, I'm sure Gary Shaw's going to say, oh, one more fight. I'm sure that, you know, there's a possibility that he may take me to litigation. I don't know, man. You know, I don't know what these guys got going to do. You know what I'm saying? Just put it this way, at the end of July 30th or July 1st, you know, I'll probably send a letter to the promotional company. They probably send a letter back, and then I'll see what happens, you know. But until then, I got to wait and see.
Well, brother, I guess the rest of us are going to have to sit back and wait and see as well. I'm hoping that it all works out for you so we can see you get back into the ring. And, man, because like I said before, you know, always been a huge supporter, always been a big fan of yours, you know, and we only want to wish you the best.
Hey, you know, I really appreciate that, you know. I really appreciate that, you know. And, I mean, there's, you know, I know the fans, there's some fans that are mad, some fans are, you know, down, you know, or are down about want me to take this fight and everything like that. You know, the fight will happen. You know, I'm just letting the fans know the fight will happen, you know, sooner or later. And, you know, you'll get the fight that you've been looking for, man. Just don't worry. Just be patient. You know, the fight will happen. And when it does, it's going to be spectacular. It's going to be spectacular. So,
I can't wait, man.
Other than that, man, I'm straight. I got a baby coming July 26th. I got my little daughter Jada. Jada's coming out, you know, July 26th.
Right.
I can't wait. So, there's a lot going on right now for me. So, I'm not even worried about it.
Well, there's two fans right there that are never going to walk away.
Well, you know, man, I really appreciate that, guys, you know, because you know what, in this game, man, one loss, man, you're like, you're a bum, he's a bum, you know, man,
right.
I'm telling you, man, boxing fans are not loyal at all, bro. They jump ship. Soon as something ain't going well, they jump ship, and then they'll jump right back on. Like,
those are the casual fans.
Hey,
Tim, those are the casual fans, man. Don't no knock us hardcore boxing fans.
Right. Because, you know, I like a fighter because, you know, the way he fights, and I like the fighter, you know, because of his personality, you know what I mean? It's a combination. And, you know, regardless of, you know, whether they're winning or losing, I still like them. You know, I will always like a Toro Gotti, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I will always like that guy. You know, I will always love Marvin Hagler. You know, I will always love those type of people. Regardless if they lose or not, they still on my team. The Lakers, they still on my team, you know what I'm saying? Dallas Cowboys, they still on my team, you know what I'm saying? I still support them. I still root for them, you know? Hey, it is what it is.
Dallas Cowboys, man, you just lost me.
See, I told you. See, you got that Dallas Cowboys. See how that?
Sorry, man, I'm a Rams fan.
I'm not a fan, though. You, brother, you pick the damn Cowboys. What the heck? Nah, see how fast you jump ship?
I'm fast, brother.
You say one thing wrong, and then they run off.
That ship was on fire. I had to jump right off.
Yeah.
One last thing, Tim, and we've belabored this point, but I just want to be really clear. Is it me, or does HBO and Gary and Boy desperately need this fight? And if so, is that really reason for cause for concern with you?
Well,
you kind of look around
and
everybody's like, it just seems to me that Gary, HBO, and Golden Boy all desperately kind of not just want this fight, but need this fight. Is that sense clear to you?
I think they, you know, they feel that they need this fight. They need the Devin Alexander fight too, you know,
Are there jobs on the line, though, Timothy? Are there jobs on the line if this fight does not happen?
Not that I know of. I honestly don't think so. I'm not sure.
Are they making you feel like there is? I mean, is the pressure so thick? Does it feel like that? Like there's literally lives on stake for this fight if it doesn't materialize in the time frame they're looking to make it happen?
I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. I just think that they gotta explore other avenues and then, you know, try to bring it back to the table, you know, sooner or later. So, I mean, right now, I honestly don't think so. I think there's a lot of fights out there that should be made, you know, that could be made, you know, and that are not getting made due to the fact of the promoters, man. The promoters not coming to agreement,
right?
You know, and things like that. So,
well, I don't think
we're
going to find out until after June 30th if we start seeing executives jump off a building here, you know?
I mean, come on, man. I know a few fans
are really jumped off the building here, and you say Dallas, you know? So,
yeah.
He used to be a fan.
Yeah, used to be a fan. Hey, Timmy.
Yeah, what happens sooner, Con Bradley or an NFL season?
What was that?
So what's more likely to happen, Con Bradley this year or an NFL season?
Oh, I'll be neither.
That's what I thought.
I'll be neither. Hey.
All right,
hey,
Tim.
You know, let me tell you something, man.
Go ahead, man.
You know how much they offered me last time to fight Devin Alexander? Before all of this. Before I fought Devin, like way back when the whole title thing and what I went through, they offered me $100,000 to fight Devin Alexander.
Okay.
Wow. $1.1 million to fight Devin, right? A year later. Okay.
Yeah, right.
They offered me what they offer me right now? 1.3 or 1.4, whatever
exactly.
The fuck the athlete.
Right.
Okay. Let's see how much it's worth. Let's see how much it's worth a year from now.
Good point.
That's an excellent point.
Let's see how much it's worth then. Let's see how much it's worth then. And then when I come back and I say, I told you, dog. Yeah, y'all gonna be like, wow, you said it, Tim. You were right.
Yeah.
You were right.
Well, that's
you were right.
That's if Cons remains, you know, around. I mean,
we're around. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
I think he will. I think he has enough speed. I think he has enough speed to do it, to be able to be around for a while. I mean, if Madonna couldn't clock him, I honestly don't think there's a big of a threat, you know, besides myself out there, besides possibly Kendall Hall, man. Kendall Hall, if he can get back in title contention, man, for his title, I think Kendall can give him a run, man. Kendall got speed, power, he's tall, you know, and he can punch, man. He can punch. And you know, Khan got knocked out with that left hook out there against Prescott.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Definitely, brother.
You know, I think that's a good matchup. But, hey, we shall see. We shall see.
Exactly.
And we'll see later. Only time will tell if I was stupid or I should have took it.
Exactly. Only time will tell. Hey, Timothy, again, brother, thank you for coming on, Leaving the Ring, brother. It's always a pleasure when you come on.
Right.
It's always fun to speak to you. And, hey, we'll speak to you before the if nothing comes about and it's the day, that particular day comes, June 30th, hopefully we can speak to you on that day and see what's if there's a drawing straw there and somebody budges and moves, you know, and hopefully you get what you're looking for.
All right, that sounds good, man. Well, shoot, I appreciate you guys, and we'll chop it up real soon. Stay tuned, man. All right, everybody keep me in your prayers. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely, brother. You take care.
Later.
That's a nice call, Dave. Actually, June 30th is, in fact, a Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. That's, you know, and, you know, I know some fight fans are going to be like, well, you know, Dave, you're a big Timothy Bradley fan, so you're going to obviously side with him. But I looked at everything. I mean, we've talked about this before that. I mean, look, the Devin Alexander, we were right about it on Leaving the Ring. I think we were the very first one saying, why is this fight happening? It's a little premature. You know, Mir Khan, I still kind of feel the same way. I kind of understand where he's coming from. It's like, look, I've been fighting everybody they've been putting in front of me, who they've suggested, who they want me to. You know, it's my turn to now put my foot down, not be pushed around or influenced, and getting in the ring with somebody at this moment that I feel is not going to draw me the bigger money that has a capability of drawing if you let it simmer a little bit. And just like Kathy Duva has been on the show numerous times, some fights are just a little too rushed. They need to be worked on in order to be delivered. They're being delivered uncooked. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, you know, it was Kathy talked about it. You and I talked about it. Steve Kim over at Max Boxing and I talked about it on the show. I think we were pretty much the only media outlet and that one promoter and Tim that was saying, look, this fight, well before it was signed, and when people were talking about it and HBO was looking for it, we're saying, this fight's not quite ready. And what I didn't really get, you know, is that, like, Tim didn't look great against Abregu. He looked serviceable. You know, I always kind of think of Tim as almost like a Marvin Hagler type. And most people will go, you know, you're absolutely crazy because they think of Hagler Hearns. But if you look back at the rest of his career, there's a lot of rounds there. He wasn't always an action fighter. He was kind of workmanlike. He would kind of pick you apart, switch sides, you know, work your body, and kind of go rounds, and was, again, workmanlike. And Tim is very much like that. He's not an explosive puncher. He's a workmanlike fighter. He kind of breaks you down. He pressures you. He has different looks, and he eventually gets you, you know, whether it's by decision or he stops you. Generally, it's by decision. And, again, you know, people, you look back at history, and, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin, and Tommy Hearns, those were guys that were offered, I believe, $500,000, something like that, to fight like 2 years or 3 years before they actually did. Leonard ended up losing to Duran and then doing the rematch, became a bigger star because of it. And, you know, lo and behold, 3 years later, Leonard made, I think, $12 to $15 million, and Thomas Hearns made $7 or $8 million, so $6 to $8 million for those fights. You can build them, but here's the other thing, is that they've got to be promoted. Both those guys, I think, fought a total of like 12 times between them in the interim. They took a ton of fights leading into that fight. They did co-features. They built towards it. And, you know, with the money being thrown at these guys, I kind of agree with Tim in that it's like Khan doesn't really sell tickets in America. He's kind of, you know, a guy that HBO's anointed as a star, and he does very well in Europe, as his last fight showed, even against, you know, McCloskey, who was like a tune-up. He does very well there. But when it comes time to sell tickets in America, he doesn't really do that well. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the ratings were. I think the Molinaggi fight did good ratings on HBO. But shouldn't it be based on how many asses you put in the seats? You know, where do you put this fight? Do you put it in Vegas, where Khan didn't do very well and Bradley hasn't really, you know, I don't believe has fought? You know, why would his fans that don't fill up seats in Palm Springs travel to Vegas to go see Tim Bradley? And, you know, why would all of a sudden Khan sell a bunch of tickets when history has shown that he hasn't sold tickets in Las Vegas? Where do you put that fight? In the UK, yeah, it's a great fight, but, you know, Tim's already gone over there to get a belt against Junior Witter. Why should the guy who I consider and everybody else considers to be the real champion at 140 have to act like a challenger and travel to Khan? I mean,
right,
there is the argument that you got to go where the money is, and that's just promotions, you know, in the old days.
But I mean, I think
he's
right by saying, well, yeah, you know, you go where the money is, you know, if you have to travel, you have to travel. But if all the cards and everything is weighing towards the other guy, you know, meaning HBO and Golden Boy are having this relationship, and he feels, hey, my people are not behind me on this one here. They're more or less just being, you know, on the outside of the negotiations of what's going to happen, what's going to come down to it. Why should I get myself and go into somebody else's backyard where it's not going to be in fair grounds?
Yeah, and you know, I just look at certain things. We'll talk to Gary in a few minutes here about promotion and everything. He's going to call in if Dave Chen's listening. He'll be calling in shortly. But, you know, I just look at this past week, and I look at the way that Bob Arum, you know, they had a media day at the wild card. There was a ton of people there, both English and Spanish. They made sure that everybody got video. You know, we all filmed the sparring session. We all got time to talk to Chavez Jr. And then, you know, the next week, we get Sebastian Zibic, you know, on the card. He brings in Gloria Allred to talk about Christy Martin. Those are little promotional things that, okay, sure, it's a bell and whistle putting Christy Martin out there. You know, she's not exactly like a relevant fighter other than, you know, she has a name. We all know who she is, and she's a good story. But those are the kinds of things that are promotion. You know, they get people talking. There's going to be ink on both those fighters. We have them available to talk to and to watch them and see them in the gym. And I don't always see that with Tim. I know they did a media workout for the last fight. But, again, you look at his schedule, too. He fought Abreu in Palm Springs back last July. He's fought one time since then against Devin Alexander in Pontiac, Michigan. Like, how is he supposed to become a bigger name fighting, you know, once in a year? It doesn't
right.
make any sense. It
no.
doesn't make any sense at all to me. And I understand this is a fight and there's a lot of money on the table. And I would be like him, kind of sitting there going, dude, do I take this fight? Am I making a huge mistake? Do I just win it and hope that I get paid next time? But wasn't that Alexander fight supposed to anoint a star? Wasn't he supposed to be a big name after that fight? I would kind of lose faith the way things went in that promotion, especially when he went in not really believing that this was going to be the right decision, thought the fight was too soon, and then history proved him right. You know, that night, there was nobody really there. It was like 3,000 seats or something like that sold. You know, we're not even sure if they were sold, but there was 3,000 people or so there. You know, the fight wasn't that great in terms of a style matchup. You know, and Alexander had looked like crap in his previous fight. It was called a super fight, but it really wasn't on any level.
Right.
And I understand why he's kind of like, you know, I'm a little skeptical about doing another quote-unquote super fight, especially when...
Well, I mean, he put all
yeah.
his trust on in the beginning on everybody that was, you know, pressuring him and advising him, look, you know, you need to fight Devon Alexander. Right now is the time. Let's do it. We're going to put it here. I mean, he even came on and said, well, Pontiac, Michigan, there's a lot of black people there. That's what they were banking on. You know, they weren't looking at that. Was it any more longer a fight town? Was there – neither guy was a hometown hero. They didn't have any hometown fighters on the undercard. There was a lot of things that were just negatives towards that fight there. So it was like more or less he's like, look, I followed the advice. Why should I dunce myself again in following the advice one more time and leaving myself outside in the rain and get soaked once again? I mean, Timothy Bradley, I think, has a very good mind of why he shouldn't go. But at the same time, too, you know, we're not promoters and we don't know everything and about everything in promoting or getting the fighter out there. Gary Shaw obviously got his take about things. I mean, he's a promoter, has been doing it for quite some time here, and all we can do is make suggestions and criticize. But at the end of the day, this is his business. And this is his realm of expertise when it comes into pushing a fighter. But Timothy has every right as a fighter that is signed, as a fighter that is promoted by the promoter, to say, I'm questioning the way you're moving me along in the rankings. Not in the rankings, but in the star quality that I'm not seeming to plateau to.
Yeah, I mean, to me he was right. I keep going back to that. But he was just straight up like, when a fighter says, like, look, this thing just isn't ready. You know, why are we doing this? And then all of a sudden it turns around, you know, and we get to the fight and it's just not as good as everybody said it was going to be. And now here we are again in the same kind of situation. I don't really blame him. And that, I think he just, for him, bottom line, and maybe he can't say it just point blank, is I want to be with a new promoter. And
I think that's what it comes down to, is that he does want to be with a new promoter. You could see the signs here of what is really going on between them two. I think it's been from the Devon Alexander. I think the unhappiness was before it being, like I said, the pressure there. We've had him on before, and he did stress, look, I'm not happy about this fight. I don't want this fight, but... you know, HBO and my promoter and so on out there telling me I need to take this fight here. And he did exactly what he was told to do. But now he's at this point where, look, my contract's almost up. Now the ball is on my court and they're going to play my game. And it's become a more frustrating thing, not just for among the players that are involved in this, but among the fight fans as well. I mean, a lot of fight fans, I believe, have felt that they're getting a huge slap here by this fight not partaking, because this was a fight that was talked about among both fighters. Both fighters were both calling each other out. Both fighters decided to agree on doing it, and now you got one fighter saying, no, I'm not doing it because of promotional distress of what's going on among my own among the company I'm running along with. Is it fair? No, but nothing in boxing is fair. Hopefully we get a Gary Shaw to tell us how unfair it is here on the show in about two more minutes. We're waiting for him to call in. You know, I want to see Timothy get back in. But he makes a really strong case, too. I mean, fight fans, you got to look at it this way. Andre Berto gets $1.2 million to fight Hernandez. He makes a strong case. You know, look, hey, this guy's fighting a nobody. I got to fight a somebody and a risky somebody. for the same amount of dollars signs? Come on. You know, I mean,
well,
that's the only
to be,
thing.
To be fair to the facts were the license fee was 1.2 for that. He actually only got $900,000 to fight Hernandez. Just to me, it's kind of quibbling, but you know, he also landed only 9 punches, so he made $100,000 per punch landed.
Right.
Yeah, but still, no, it is. I understand where Tim's at, but and by that same argument, it's like Berto doesn't really sell any tickets either. You know, so again, you know, it goes back to. HBO kind of decides that something's worth something, and then it becomes that, you know. You look at Chad Dawson, and if you go by public opinion, and this was not just my opinion, this was many opinions. I think you're actually the only media person that I've talked to that didn't say that they were bored by Chad Dawson. But you look at the fans, none of them came out of that fight going, boy, I hope we see Hopkins-Dawson. You know, he won the fight, but he lost the crowd. And more often than not, to me, the crowd is really what you need to win. You know, like I was talking to Craig McEwen last week over at Wildcard during the media day for Chavez. And he said, you know, the craziest thing is that, because we were talking about the fight with Andy Lee, and he said, you know, I had a choice to either go out there and stink out the joint, or I could have just, you know, did what I was doing, try to back him up and win the fight that way. And I decided to try to back him up and win the fight that way. And I, you know, I had been knocked down and I ended up getting stopped. But because of that, because he went on in his shield and it was an exciting fight, he put on a great performance, even losing, he's gotten more fans out of that and more people stopping him to tell him what a great fight it was. I even stopped him. I said, I know you don't want to hear this or about this fight, but it was a hell of a fight you put on. You know, and I was really impressed by what you did. You know, you'll be better for it, you know, down the line. You almost had the fight won and you didn't. And he was like, you know, nobody has really stopped me to dog me. Nobody's criticized me in that fight or said anything bad to me. All anybody said to me, and more people have stopped me now than ever before, was what a hell of a fight that was. And,
right.
You know, in losing, he won the crowd. And in winning, you know, Chad turned a lot of people off. And you know, you can't argue with that. You can say they don't know what they're seeing or they don't understand good boxing when they see it. But the bottom line is it's entertainment. And if you're not entertained by somebody, you just simply aren't.
Look,
you know?
I'm not saying that I would pay to go see Chad Dawson. You know, I've stressed how much I, you know, he is a good boxer. You can't take that away from me at all. And huh. But is he a fighter that you would want to see? I mean, just think about this here. The fighters that have been entertaining, the fighters that have been exciting, really honestly don't even get half the exposure that the way Chad Dawson is getting. You know, Arturo Gatti was an exciting guy, and no matter where he went, he drew a huge, huge crowd. But HBO was not giving him the love the way Chad Dawson is getting. He's not getting the reception of what the suits are giving him, the after party that the executives are saying that he's worth. But I go back again and say I was not that bored for the first half. I was actually entertained. It was that second half that left me going, okay, well, you know, here we go again. And I don't want to put all the blame on him. I say that sometimes when you're told something and you read it wrong or you misunderstand it, the miscommunication could kick in and it can lead to something different more than what we could. I think there was a possibility, Gabe, that we're going to see a TKO. But I think that after hearing his corner tell him he needed to pick it up, I think it made him go into this mind frame of, I'm a puncher. I have enough power to punch this guy, so I'm going to look for one big single shot. And I think that screwed the kid out of possibly getting a TKO that night. He was landing various combinations. You know, he looked good. You know, he looked like a guy that wanted to come and try to be somewhat entertaining. But then after hearing his lead trainer tell him, you're not doing enough, you got to pick it up, you know, you got to take this guy out. You can't leave this in the hands of, remember where we're at. That, to me, kind of push the kid to going, okay, I'm remembering where we're at, and I'm going to exactly do what you're saying. And I think he carried out the call of what he thought Emmanuel was saying was knock him out with one big punch, which he's never been a one big punch knockout artist.
Well, but Manny didn't say knock him out with one big punch. Right?
No, he so didn't. I'm saying that
you need to say you step it up. And so
right. I'm saying that's what the
trainer. Then he's not interpreting his trainer right.
Well, that's
you know,
what I'm saying. He did not receive the instructions the way Emmanuel was kind of interpreting to him. He wasn't following him. He basically didn't hear what Emmanuel was trying to give out to him. I think he just heard you need to step it up, and he thought step it up means try to go for a knockout, you know,
yeah.
Rather than work for that knockout, which I think he was working for. I think he was kind of going down the lines of you know, possibly getting that TKO win. You know, it's just
He's also done this in the last couple fights, though. You know, the Dawson fight, he kind of becomes passive in the back end of a fight. He starts out great, and then he kind of gives ground. I mean, to me, the biggest problem I have with him is that he didn't maintain the center of the ring. He didn't maintain control of the fight, you know, and he kind of let Diakonu get back in it. And whether that was because he misinterpreted what Manny was saying or not, I mean, to me, I've kind of seen the pattern with him is that with pressure fighters, he tends to give ground and look to counter with a big shot as opposed to just kind of keeping control. I mean, maybe he gassed. I don't really know. You know, it was a strange fight. You know, it just seemed to me, though, overall, he didn't even, when they announced him the winner, he just had this stone face. And that kind of encapsulated everything for me. It was just kind of passionless. Even when he was doing well, it was just kind of, where is this leading? You know, where is he going with this? And is he willing to risk a little bit? And to me, I just think when you've got that safety valve of, well, I've already got this next fight locked up, you're not really going to go for it, you know. And I don't know. It was a strange fight. I mean, I guess we'll, you know, agree to disagree. I just emailed Gary and let him know that we're all ready for him. So hopefully he'll be calling in shortly.
Well, it's reported that 1.837 million live viewers witnessed the Hopkins-Pascal fight, which was a very entertaining fight. A lot of drama in that fight, but you know, if Chad Dawson being on a high scale network where you're going to get tons and tons of views, I mean, you look at the amount of views that was tuned in, the viewers that tuned in for that fight. You're absolutely right. If he was looking to gain fans and gain exposure and gain the subscribers to HBO or the streamers, he didn't do the performance that he should do. But it goes back to what you were saying, Gabriel, with the temperament and the attitude. Is not there. You know, this is a guy that has talent that is using it just enough to get by and doesn't want to take that extra step or that extra risk of daring to be great. It's just not going to happen. I don't see it happening here with Chad Dawson. I just see a very subpar kind of guy that's going to give us a performance that is comfortable for himself, not even comfortable for Emmanuel Stewart. I say one more fight with Emmanuel, and I got to tell you, I think Emmanuel kicks rocks after that.
Yeah,
I don't see him sticking around. You know, Emmanuel just seems like he's less tolerant with the age that he's getting to down to. You know, he's looking for a guy that's going to carry off the instructions. We've seen it happen with Emmanuel Stewart times before. You know, he's after second performance. If you're just not doing, if you have the capabilities of doing what he's asking for, but you're just not doing it in the ring, he looks at it, you know what, I'm wasting my time. There's just no reason for us to mesh. There's no reason for us to continue a relationship when we're not communicating correctly where it counts. What's his fight night?
It seems to me, though, the last few guys that, like Kermit Cintron would be a good example. They worked together for several fights, and it never quite gelled. And it was actually Kermit that decided to go over to Ronnie Shields. Manny's usually, you know, if he takes you on, he believes that he can kind of change what you're doing. And I'm not sure. I think it was Jermaine Taylor that decided to end it. But you know, they're already in talks right now to do the Chad Dawson versus Bernard Hopkins fight in the fall. So I imagine there won't be, you know, a major change there.
No.
If Chad loses, yeah, I could see that. But But Manny doesn't seem to me to be a guy that abandons his projects. He's usually brought in as a hired gun, and if things don't work out, then he's brought out, you know. But we'll see. You know, I think it's I never really thought of it when I heard about the marriage between those two guys, you know, that partnership. I didn't really think that it was a great fit just because of Chad's temperament, you know. And I kind of look at it, too, that it might be a strength for him, that he is kind of an aloof guy. You can't really quite get in his head, and Hopkins is going to do everything he can to get in Chad's head. And since he's a guy that doesn't seem to really react at all, it's going to be interesting to see how Hopkins accomplishes that. And if he sees it as a success when Chad just kind of goes, okay.
I can see one guy, Bernard Hopkins. I think this is the ultra test for Bernard to try to get inside. I mean, does he really want to get inside the head of a Chad Dawson, though? I mean, he may find nothing but emptiness in there, you know? Maybe a few boxes here with some paperwork, but other than that, I don't think he's going to find a whole lot. This is a really unemotional guy. I mean, I think we should send him to the Wizard of Oz.
Though, you know? That could be definitely a strength, you know, with a Hopkins. It's like, look at Pascal. He tried to meet Hopkins by talking shit and bringing up the tests and
right.
and getting all worked up. And that was all energy that he burned from moment one, whereas Hopkins is very focused. I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to do that to you. And really just went at him. And if Chad is just kind of, you know, lets it roll off of him and doesn't buy into that, because that's just not his temperament. Again, I almost kind of think that's a strength for him, you know, that he tries to get in his head and it's just not possible because he's just like, well, you know, we'll just let my performance speak for itself. And, you know, Hopkins is a guy that if you don't bother him, he may not bother you too much. It could be a respectful kind of campaign. But we'll see. You know, Hopkins has always got something new for every guy that he fights, you know, and a new approach. So it'd be interesting, you know. I think Chad's got all the tools to win the fight. I think it's a very winnable fight for him. You know, we'll see. You know, I think he can keep away. He's a southpaw, which already initially just, you know, innately makes him, you know, a difficult style. He's a good boxer. He moves very well. I think it could be something that will surprise people. Because Pascal, he moves, but he moves without purpose. You know, he's kind of explosive in spots, but, boy, he's like the most nervous fighter on the planet. He just seems so tight and wound up, and then he throws stuff, and it's not very quality, and it's not very straight. And I think Hopkins just kind of dialed into him real early and particularly late in the last fight. And when he started this next fight, he just kind of, you know, it was like round 13. You know, he went in, he was a little more aggressive, kind of showed that I'm not afraid of you. I don't think you're going to blow me out or knock me down again. I'm just going to go right at you. And I think it just freaked poor Pascal out until he just had nothing really left. You know, he's just not a complete fighter, that guy. Whereas Hopkins is the most complete fighter I've seen in years.
I think you're absolutely right. He's not a complete fighter, and I think that's what, you know, Hopkins was able to take advantage and saw, you know, with a lot of other people were seeing was that Pascal, you've seen a guy that really just fought off emotions. There was no game plan there. There was nothing that was, you know, cemented in what he had planned out to do, you know. His thing was try not to gas out. I think that really played a big part when Bernard was basically telling him what the whole world was seeing was a champion, a fighter who gassed out after four or five good rounds, you know. He kind of threw his whole load out there, didn't know how to reserve it, didn't know how to pace himself. And Bihop was like, look, I'm going to get in his head and I'm going to remind him over and over and over, you gassed out. And Pascal, I think to me, fell into that trap of not trying to gas out and not fighting his fight. You know, he had his moments, his spurts, but he allowed Hopkins to walk around him and pot shot him with a right hand numerous times, which told me that Pascal was trying to reserve something there to hold off to the later rounds, which allowed time for Bernard to work around that and build up points and do what he needs to do. Well, do what he does best. I think that's where Pascal needs to go back and look at that fight over again and see exactly what his mistakes were. Just not that one alone, but there was a lot of mistakes that he did do. But also, too, you saw the legs of Pascal in that fight, man. They were no longer there after the second, third round of him getting rocked by Bernard Hopkins. His legs never regained.
Yeah, he got hurt bad.
yeah, they just never regained it back. You know, you can't say, you know, he wasn't prepared for this fight. This guy did come in shape. He looked in shape, but he just, his legs, his head and his face had no discouragement in it, but his legs did. You know what I mean? His legs were very discouraged.
I mean, his eyes and everything. When he got hurt, it was a real subtle shift in the fight, but it was a very clear shift. And you could see it. His legs kind of went, his body language, all of a sudden he wasn't as aggressive. He was kind of moving away. And Hopkins, you know, that just gave him more, more confidence to kind of keep coming forward, keep doing what he was doing because it was working, you know. And to me, that was really, the fight was in essence almost over at that point, you know, because Hopkins, once he gets control of you, I've rarely seen him lose it. I mean, he did get hurt himself in that fight.
Yes, he did.
But he got hurt a little bit later, but he's also a lot more subtle about the way he handles it. And he's also a guy, I've never really seen this. It's like Pascal hurt him and then just took off. It was like, I don't want to go near this guy. He kind of like flurried on him and then he backed off. He didn't, you know, again, I think...
Well, it goes back to that whole mind frame. I think that Pascal saw, I hurt him. The last time I let my whole load out and I gassed out. I think that was the big underline and the concern that he had there, Gabriel. When he did hurt Bernard, he did try to unleash something, but he tried to maintain it. And it allowed B-Hop to recoup faster and allowed B-Hop to kind of dictate and take over on ring generalship and take back what he had lost in that fight, you know, when he did get hurt. I think there was a lot of things that Pascal did it himself that made it a little bit more easier for Bernard Hopkins. But going back to really quick with, Chad Dawson, you said that, you know, it's a fight that he could possibly win. I think you're absolutely right because of size difference. Pascal was just a much smaller guy. You know, Chad's a bigger guy, you know, and he would be able to try to hold off Bernard with a jab. But the thing to me is that, does he do enough? Does he let his hands go, or does he just kind of go back onto that offense mode where he allows Bernard to come in, throw punches, maybe not land punches, but enough to shoe shine where it kind of sways the judges to say, okay, this kid did enough. I mean, Jermaine Taylor was the perfect guy to, if you look at that fight, he threw a lot of punches, didn't necessarily land a whole lot of them, but he was a much, much, much busier guy. That if he wasn't a busier guy, I think Bernard would have had a clear-cut win over Jermaine Taylor. I think Chad would have to reevaluate himself in this fight and really look at it and say, I have to be the busier guy like the way I was in the first half of the fight I was on the undercard in order to be successful against a guy that waits to see what you're going to do and to see if you gas out. Bernard banks on you gassing out in his fights.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, there was another thing about just when he hurt Bernard, it comes down to experience and being relaxed. And Bernard was like a picture of relaxation. You know, he was just very calm in there from moment one. And when he hurts you, he goes right down to the body. Then he comes upstairs. He mixes his attack. He just smother himself and go crazy. When Pascal hurt Hopkins, he was like, oh, my God, I've got him hurt. And he just kind of swarmed. He threw a bunch of shots, kind of skittered off of Hopkins' back, off the side of his head and his arms. He didn't throw any uppercuts when Bernard bent at the waist. He didn't go to his body. You know, he didn't keep him hurt. Instead, he just panicked. You know, you almost get the sense that it was like he, you know, had probably more adrenaline pumping through him when he hurt Hopkins than Hopkins did when he got hurt. And so when that wears off, boom, immediately you're also even more tired. You know, and that takes probably a couple rounds or a round. And then that adrenaline kind of goes away, and you're left with, you know, exhaustion and your legs. And also you're thinking, damn it, that was my moment. You know, I missed that moment. I really think the guy just kind of outthinks himself. And then, you know, added to which his technique just is inferior to Hopkins. It's inferior to a lot of people. And, you know, against a guy like Chad Dawson, he really fought the right kind of fight, but he also faded.
Gabe, I'm going to interrupt you just really quick because I believe we do have Gary Shaw on the line. Mr. Gary Shaw, are you there? Hello?
Yes, I'm here live and in person.
How you doing, sir? Hey, welcome to the show, Leaving the Ring. It's myself, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. How you doing this evening?
Good, very good, thank you.
Great, great. Did you have a chance to listen with Timothy Bradley on the line with us, speaking about his situation with yourself, HBO, and Amir Khan?
No, I just got back from out of the country and landed a short time ago and just got home. I have not heard anything.
Gary, you know, he was pretty strong about this. He says, listen, this is the problem. My promoter is not doing his job. I'm not being promoted correctly. And me going into this fight would be I am the champion opponent for a guy that shouldn't be the headliner for this fight. What do you say about it? How do you feel about that?
Well, look, this is obviously going to turn into a legal case. The only thing I'll say is I think Thompson Boxing and Gary Shore Productions did a Hall of Fame job with Timmy Bradley. We brought him to the world title in a very, very short time. And, you know, it is what it is. I don't know where he got this thing that he was second fiddle to Amir Khan because it was a 50-50 deal with Golden Boy and Gary Shore Productions. It was a total 100% co-promotion. So he's either not well-informed or he doesn't want to be, one or the other.
I'm going to pass it over really quick to my co-host, Gabriel.
Sure.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
My
There was one comment that Tim made that stuck out to me. Was he asked the question, you know, why did I fight leading up to that Alexander fight only one time in a year? You know, he fought last July, that Agregu fight, and then he fought Alexander. And I guess my question is, why did that happen? And do you think that if he'd have fought more often leading up to that, that both of them, maybe even a co-promotion, that would have made that fight bigger?
No, I think that HBO thought the fight was very big, and they paid enough money to prove that that in their minds was very big, and were very generous in giving the loser a substantial amount of money no matter what, and the winner to fight Khan and make more money. As it turned out, neither fighter was exciting. And Timmy Bradley wasn't exciting in the way he fought. And, you know, it is what it is. But at any rate, he was guaranteed a fight with Khan. He's been wanting Khan, and now he's got Khan, and now he doesn't want him.
According to Tim, and this was in a story yesterday by Steve, and Tim reiterated the same thing, that as he understood it, after the Alexander fight, he was going to have four options: Maidana, Berto, Khan, or a rematch with Alexander for about like $1.5 million. But to hear Tim say it, he was only offered Khan.
No, well,
is that
that's
true?
No, it's absolutely not true. First of all, it's at HBO's option, not at Tim Bradley's option. Maidana was not available. Khan was available. Berto is not available. Berto is 147 pounds. Is that what he wants to do? He wants to move up now and fight Berto at 147? I mean, that was a fallback if nobody was available. The fact that Khan was there and we could go for Khan's belt, and that's the biggest fight on the board as far as HBO is concerned. You know, it was understood between Don King and myself when we made the deal and our fighters that the loser would get a fight, and that the winner would get Khan for the biggest fight on HBO this year in 2011.
Now, you had said, you know, we said earlier on here that you guys did a Hall of Fame job, and you know, I kind of liken it to the way you've moved him to a title and to the Alexander fight, similar to the way, you know, Ludabella has moved Martinez. They've expertly, you know, moved their guy into a title shot, had some key fights on HBO, but at the same time, neither guy really sells any tickets, and HBO monetarily got behind Alexander and Bradley, but ultimately it didn't sell a lot of tickets. So do you think, in a sense, there's a difference between moving a guy to a title and building him promotion-wise into a draw?
Well, I don't know that you can make someone a draw. I mean, that's a mouthful. There are two draws in boxing right now, basically, and that's Pacquiao and Mayweather. Those are the draws, with Cotto, I guess, you know, somewhat behind them, you know, with all of Puerto Rico behind Cotto.
Right.
but there are not American fighters that I think that you can name me that are draw. Sergio Martinez may be the best fighter on the planet right now other than Mayweather and Pacquiao. And you know, with all due respect, he's not drawing. He can't draw.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, for Tim Bradley, who couldn't sell out his own hometown to say I should run a rally, I think someone emailed me that I should have run rallies for him, or he said it, or whatever. This is not American Idol. I just think that Thompson Boxing and myself did a spectacular job for Timmy. Got him well paid. I even gave him Abrego, who's my fighter, who was undefeated, to fight so we could show that we could fight at 147 if the Mayweather or Pacquiao fight could have been made.
The one thing we talked about with Tim on the show just a little while ago was the lead into the Dawson co-promotion with the Hopkins, Pascal, and Dawson on the undercard.
Right.
And there was a rumor that was out that you didn't want to pay for the conference call for Dawson. And I noticed that there wasn't a lot of articles about him. I didn't really see any articles about him last week. And Tim's worry was that he would be treated like a B-side, basically, and kind of
let's not compare it. On Tim Bradley and Amir Khan, let's get it straight. It was a 50-50 deal, 100% co-promotion between Golden Boy and Gary Shore Productions and Thompson Boxing. That's fact. In Canada, we were an undercard fight that was put in originally in a dressing room with all the undercard fighters.
So was he wrong? Was he wrong then in believing that if this was a 50-50 fight, co-promotion wise, was he wrong in believing that? Well, his promoter wasn't going to have any say of where the venue was going to be at, or the judges, or the referee.
100% wrong. 100% wrong. Richard Schaefer would tell you 100% wrong. We were 50-50 co-promoters. HBO, Kerry Davis, Ross Greenberg would tell you the same thing. It was a 50-50 fight, and Amir Khan gave up 50% of the pay-per-view in England that was offered to us, and I offered to Timmy.
Why is there such a miscommunication between you and
Timmy?
Because
Cameron Duncan hates Gary Shaw, and since he came, we were very close, Timmy, Thompson, and Gary Shaw. When Cameron Duncan came aboard, for whatever reason, it's never been the same. That's history. I don't want to discuss it, but what you're telling me now is absolute 1,000% fabrication. I want to repeat it. 50-50 co-promotion, 100%, including 50% of Amir Khan's pay-per-view in England.
Is that a 50-50% split on the purse, or just in terms of the promotion?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah, we were getting half of HBO's money. Amir Khan was getting half of HBO's money, and we were splitting everything 50-50 down the middle, including Amir Khan's pay-per-view in England.
So if no Amir Khan here, Gary, if there's no Amir Khan in the picture, in the ring with Timothy Bradley, is there no fight for Bradley for this remainder of this whole year? I mean, your contract, I believe, is what, ending in June 30th?
No, my contract ended in June 30th, but it was known all along that we were fighting Amir Khan on July 23rd. That's fact between everyone. It won't be fact between Timmy, because they'll hang their hat on that the fight had to happen before June 30th, when they knew all along in all the documents. I don't want to get legal. They knew that the fight was July 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy that can't sell a ticket, as you all say, like Tim Bradley, to turn down a $1.4 million guarantee against 80-20, which could have brought him to maybe $2 million, maybe more, depending a lot on the English pay-per-view. I leave that up to you and your listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me a fight that's winnable for Timmy. I'd pick him to win the fight, you know,
but
six ways.
Of course, but whether you pick him to win or you're a Amir Khan fan, whatever, that kind of money today to turn down is mind-boggling. I don't get it.
Well, this has happened to you twice already, Gary. I mean, Angulo turned down, I forgot the exact amount.
$750,000.
Yeah, with Martinez. I mean, why do you think this is continuously happening to you?
Maybe, you know, things come in threes or pairs or whatever. You know, I don't take it personally. You know, I don't know why Pedro turned down $750,000. He thought he was worth $1 million, but we weren't offered $1 million. So he was asking for more money than we were offered. Here, everybody knows, the world knows what the deal is: 1.4 against 80-20. So to turn that down, I don't know. The fans, I know what the fans, I'm told, are blogging on the ESPN websites. And everybody thinks, you know, Timmy's made a bad mistake. I'm not going to comment on that. That's, you know, Timmy and his wife, you know, they'll either find out that, you know, they didn't make a right move, or maybe they'll find out they made a great move. I can't answer that right now. All I know is what I offered the fighter. And I thought, you know, it was a very, very generous offer. And to get 50% of the English pay-per-view, I think it's spectacular. They won't give it to anyone else.
No, they wouldn't offer it to Judah, that's for sure.
No, they did not.
And they offered him less money.
Right. They offered him less money and not the share of the pay-per-view.
Right.
And he's going to take it. And if he wins, he's the next star.
Now, is there a contract extension with you guys? Should he take this fight and fight under your banner?
No, there was not. I have first and last in the matching. If I'm going to offer you this, but you have to sign an extension. And that was not the case.
Oh, okay. There's nothing that kicks in or anything like
No, nothing that kicks in. And he's comparing himself with what Devin Alexander is getting, or got, or whatever. I'm being told, and I don't know this factually, but I'm being told that Devin Alexander, for his fight with Matisse, is only getting $800,000.
Hmm.
So Timmy was getting substantially more.
Now,
wow.
Is it fair to say that considering all that's going on right now, that Tim might have some trepidation about being promoted by you, since everything that's going
on
with you guys?
Why? He didn't have a problem when he signed on, and I brought him to the world title.
Sure,
when fights fell,
when
fights fell through, and we got the network to buy Edna Cherry against him. It's like a marriage. You can't. There are good days and there are bad days, but you try to work through everything.
Right.
And I'm not going to defend myself. I thought I did a terrific job promoting Tim Bradley.
Well, so we won't belabor the point. Let's move on to your other fighter then. Mr. Dawson, one of your other fighters.
Sure.
I'm hearing that you guys are now have begun negotiations with Hopkins, because immediately after the fight.
Yes, the answer is yes to that. The answer is Richard Schaefer and I have spoken. Yes, we've come to a basic agreement, yes.
And that'll probably take place in the fall?
Hopefully, yes.
Okay.
That's the,
and as far as
HBO wasn't in because of the holiday weekend. On Tuesday, Richard and I will get on the phone with HBO.
And Victor Chinian?
Vic, obviously, RC called him out. So look to do an RC fight. I'm meeting with Ken Hirschman in Showtime the week after next, because he's out all next week.
So you do the rematch. That would be an awesome fight. The first fight was great.
Yeah, we would do that. If Donaire had a home, we would do Donaire. I mean, those are two fights that the RC fight is one that RC wants. Darchinian still wants Nonito, but, you know, until he finds, until they make their deal, we don't know yet. Between Top Rank and Golden Boy.
There was something you and I talked about. Maybe you don't want to address this, but you and Steve go back and forth quite a bit, and there's no love lost between you guys. But
that's only recent. Let's set the record straight. Prior to the Silverdome, he would call me every single day. I was his best friend, and my wife would attest to that. So now you can take it from the Silverdome to today, just to set the record straight.
And he's referred to you as a TV packager.
That's all right.
You How do you respond to a criticism like that?
I don't take it as a criticism. We're all TV packagers. We all get money from the TV, and we get money from the site. Who's not a TV packager? My good friend Lou DiBella is a TV packager. My good friend Leon Margolis is a TV packager. My good friend Dan Goosen is a TV packager. I don't take that. I would think every fighter would be happy to know that I'm a TV packager. They sign with me, I'm going to get them on TV. I don't get that. I don't take it. I'm sure Steve means it nasty, but to me, I take it complimentary.
Why do you think that the Bradley Alexander fight didn't go the way, you know, it ended up in Pontiac, and I guess the thought was...
Because I didn't want to go to St. Louis. You know, everybody switches the story. It was supposed to go to St. Louis, but I knew it wasn't the right place for my fighter coming off a Devin Alexander win, in which I didn't think he won the fight.
Right.
And the most money that we could get was in St. Louis. That was a co-promotion with Don King. I wasn't in charge. Don King wasn't in charge. Money was in charge. So let's get the record straight. So the most money that we could get was in St. Louis. At the last moment, or towards the last moments, I was able to pull out the Silver Dome in Pontiac, which brought more money guaranteed than we could get in St. Louis. I thought I did the right thing for my fighter.
In terms of just putting it in more of a neutral site,
yes,
where everything wasn't going
to
be.
So if I didn't do that and I brought Tim Bradley to St. Louis, this call would be, why did you bring Tim Bradley to St. Louis?
Don't you think there would have been more people there, though?
I'm sorry?
Don't you think there would have been a bigger gate?
Of course. It would have been sold out for Devin Alexander. More reason why would I bring my fighter there if I can get more money somewhere else and be in neutral territory?
You know, I'm not a promoter, so, you know, you're kind of teaching me about the business.
I'm talking common sense, what one would do for someone they represent. If you were an attorney, where would you rather be? In your hometown? In the other person's hometown? Or, at best, in a neutral territory?
I agree with the logic. You know,
okay.
What I'm asking mainly is when you say more money, that's the site fee. But is it nominal compared to, say, the site fee plus what the gate would generate? I mean, I understand it's going to be nothing but Devin Alexander fans. But
the gate
in terms of overall money,
the gate in St. Louis hardly generate anything. You know, I mean, in Pontiac, we're not a draw. You can take Pacquiao and Mayweather anywhere and draw. Everyone else, you can't do that.
That's what I'm asking. I mean, I understand there'd be a lot more Devin Alexander fans in St. Louis, but
not
money,
only Devin Alexander, and the fans control a lot of times the officials. Why would I do that to my fighter? It would make no sense.
Fair enough. No, I understand.
That's why I said. And Steve Kim took it out of context. I wouldn't care if there were 500 fans there. I'd rather be in a neutral territory than go into enemy territory.
And at least get, you know, a fair shake for your fighter.
Of course. What happens if I went to St. Louis and Tim Bradley won the fight, but the judges, being swayed by 10,000 Devin Alexander fans, gave it to Devin Alexander? Then you'd all have me on. Why would I bring my fighter to St. Louis? And you'd be right.
Right.
And you'd be correct. I don't do that if I can help it. I avoid it at all costs.
What's going on, Gary, with El Perro? I mean, what's happening here? Is this citizenship being worked on? Are we going to see him fight? Why hasn't
well,
he been
I'm
back?
Trying, you haven't seen him because he's an illegal alien. And it goes a little deeper than that. I'm trying to get him a fight right now as we speak in Mexico and somewhere else out of the country. I'm working on that as we speak.
Is there a location talked about yet? Is that something?
No, I really can't talk about it because I'm in the middle of a negotiation on a fight for him right now.
So we're soon to see him back, get back into the ring, possibly in Mexico.
Well, when you say we're going to soon see him, I don't know that you're going to see him, but hopefully he'll be back in the ring.
Is that also kind of part of the problem, is that you can't – HBO is not going to Mexico.
HBO is not going. Showtime's not going to Mexico. Showtime pulled out of the pulled out of the Abner Maris tournament with Becco and Darchinian, and we had a great deal in Mexico. Showtime was going to go because of all the violence. They will not go under any circumstances.
Yeah, I'm Mexican, and I'm not going to Mexico. Yeah,
okay. They left us, and that was at the last moment, left us naked, and that's how we wound up in the Nokia Center.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it just seems that he's been sitting on the shelf for so long.
Yeah, but I didn't cause it. I had him as going into superstardom on HBO. I started him on Showtime and moved him to HBO. Well, why are you on my case? I didn't do whatever is costing him. He did it.
Was there a battle out between you and HBO because of them not wanting to back him up on this non-citizenship here?
No. Top Rank turned him in, not Gary Shaw. Top Rank turned him into HBO because HBO was trying to force a Chavez and a...
Did we lose him? Gabe, are you there? Did we lose Gary?
I'm there. I think we just lost Gary. Maybe Top Rank just cut off the call.
Gary, are you there?
Nope, I think we just lost him.
I could see him still on the line. Maybe he walked away from it. He's obviously going to have to call in. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll get him back. It's interesting. It's interesting hearing the other side of things, you know. At the same time, I mean, I think it really just boils down to is that Gary feels he did a good job. Tim doesn't agree.
Well, that's why I said, you know, it's you know, you're going to hear one side of a story, and you're going to hear the other side. I mean, we don't do this. We're not promoters. We're going to talk about what we see and what we think, and we're going to get clarification. That's why we decided, you know, to have Timothy Bradley and Gary Shaw back to back so that we can hear exactly what he had to say. I mean, I really hate trying to just crucify one person. You know, you want to definitely hear what they have to say. We got him back on. Gary, you there?
Yeah, I just got back on. I'm on a landline, so I don't know what cut
off. I think Top Rank cut you off for a minute.
I'm not a problem. I heard that Oscar just tweeted peace between him and Bob Arum.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the best place to do to apologize, though, there, Gary. I don't know. Maybe a phone call or a drive down to the office. Now, let's get back to this here. Top Rank turns in Angulo. I mean, because of a fight that possibly was going to come down to their fighter facing your fighter in the ring, so they would do
All I'm going to leave it is I'm telling you 1,000% I know that Top Rank called HBO.
Wow.
I'm still trying to figure out how an illegal alien was able to fight on HBO so many times.
Of course, nobody knew he was illegal.
Not even yourself?
Not even myself, and nobody knew. It goes beyond being illegal. That's all I'm going to say. It goes beyond being illegal, and I'm telling you guys to drop it. I'm not going to discuss it other than it goes beyond being illegal.
All right.
Okay, he didn't just cross the border and sneak in. It goes beyond that.
Okay.
All right. I did have one more question on it. If you want to drop it, we can drop it. I think I'm actually that was actually my only other question was a follow-up to that. But do you want to go further in it? no further questions, Your Honor. Well, Gary, I want to thank you for being on, and I hope, you know, we covered everything on your end of it, like we were saying when you got cut off, that we wanted to make sure that you were on and Tim was on. That way, you know, the listeners can hear kind of both ends of the thing.
I believe that Tim is, from what you're telling me, and I didn't listen, and I didn't read Steve Kim's article, But from what you're telling me, he's way misinformed. And, you know,
well,
I invite you to call Richard Schaefer, who will tell you that it was a 50-50 deal, 100%, with the clauses in there being to maximize revenue. So, you know.
Does that $1.2 million, though, stay just with Amir Khan? I mean, does it have to be with that named fighter?
No, it was
$1.5 million.
My guarantee was $1.4 versus an 80-20 split, whichever was more. So if an 80-20 split was $2 million, he would get $2
million. Wow. But that's only if the Amir Khan fight.
Right, because Amir Khan brings the most money. You're talking about English pay-per-view. It could be very, very substantial.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, he does very well. He doesn't sell tickets here, but he definitely sells pay-per-views over there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, it's not as if that Cameron Duncan ever called me and said, we want to fight Berto. I never heard that ever from Timmy, and I never heard it from Cameron Duncan. And if you read every article ever done in the last 6 months, it's Tim Bradley saying he wants to fight Amir Khan. So
I think there's no question. And he even said he put his foot in his mouth by saying that.
You didn't put your foot in the mouth. If you're the best fighter and you have a chance to fight who they now perceive is another best fighter and get another belt and get handsomely paid, how did you put your foot in your mouth? And you're on HBO.
Again, I think he's misinformed, though. I think that's the big part here. What you're saying and what he's saying is just two completely different things. I think that's why he's feeling, I put my foot in my mouth, because I'm not getting the, he said he feels that he's not getting the promotional backings or the monies that this is deserved to him for the Amir Khan fight.
Well, wait, they're two different things. He's getting the promotional backing because I did a spectacular deal to begin with HBO, which is supposedly, from everybody out in the world, got Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis in trouble because I got a win-lose provision for more money, or this, you know, the more money than we fought for the first time. So
right.
I did my job. The second part of my job was to negotiate with Richard Schaefer. I did 50-50. I can't do better than that. We're not going to get a bigger buy than Amir Khan. We can't get, who could do better than 50-50 on the, you know, the rights to pay-per-view in England? They're not going to give us a larger split. So I did everything feasibly possible. Now, if Tim Bradley doesn't think he's getting paid enough, then you know, I don't want to say he's delusional, but then I don't know where he gets more money for fighting Amir Khan or this stuff where you... I don't believe in this stuff where everybody says, you need to let the fight percolate. That's what they did with Juan Man and Gamboa. You think that fight is as exciting anymore? I'll ask you two.
Yeah.
I would say at this particular moment, no.
No, the answer is no. It's not as exciting anymore because now one guy got defeated. So it's not there.
So ABC was trying to make the, we talked about this earlier, you know, Leonard Hearns, they offered them $500,000 to fight 3 years before they did. Leonard lost to Duran, then he gets his rematch. And then 3 years later, they made, you know, $12 million and $6 million.
Well, let me ask you a question, because you're doing the talking and I'm doing the listening. Are you comparing Tim Bradley with Leonard and Hearns?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, I'm just asking. I'm not being a wise guy. I'm asking. You're saying it, so I want you to tell your viewers that you believe they're the same. And that this fight...
Here's another example that Tim gave me. He said that he was offered $100,000 initially a year or so before to fight Alexander. And then a year later,
there's no truth to that at all. There is no truth to that at all. There is no truth. Tell him to take a lie detector test, and I'll take the lie detector test. The guy who loses only has to pay. We can still be buddies. The only guy that has to pay the other guy's lie detector test. Why would I offer him $100,000? I paid him $750,000 to fight Abrego. Let me repeat that. $750,000 to fight Abrego. You telling me I'm doing a bad job? Devin Alexander got paid $500,000 to be in a life and death fight in St. Louis.
We're not telling you doing a bad job, Gary.
I'm sorry?
We're not telling you that you're doing a bad job, but it seems your fighter's telling you that.
That's like my ex-wife telling me I wasn't a good husband. But she left with all the furniture. She left with the house, two cars, and 90% of my money. So, you know.
Well, I don't even know what to say to that.
All I'm saying to you is.
Well, I think Timothy Bradley this time cut him off from the conversation of us having here, because we did lose Gary Shaw again. I think we're almost at the end of Gary. Are you there? Hello.
Damn it! He's gonna blame us now.
We're
cutting him off.
I think we're almost at the end of our interview, though, with him. I think we've asked him every question in the book. If not, I know I could see a couple of listeners that know us personally. They're a part of the media that are on listening. If you have any questions, you go ahead and text myself or Gabriel Montoya. Other than that, I think we covered it. You know, going on the Angulo, I had plenty of good questions about that, but obviously he said due to legal issues or other than anything else than that, he can't speak on,
I had one really good question.
we got Gary back. Gary, are you there?
Yeah, I do want to say one last thing in closing.
Go ahead.
Ken
Go ahead.
Thompson from Thompson Boxing is probably the sweetest person that I've ever met within the entire sport. A real gentleman. Someone that's not driven by the money, very, very, very successful outside of boxing. You should call him in, and you should interview him on your program.
Absolutely, will do.
And that would be fair because he is one of the true gentlemen of our sport.
Absolutely, and I've had a chance to actually meet him as well, and he is a good kind of artist guy. You know, Gary, we appreciate you coming on and speaking to us, and telling us, your take on and what you're saying is really happening here. I hope that this whole mess gets cleared by among you guys, and continue on with helping out your fighters in the career and the promotional job that you've been doing, and. Other than that, brother, thank you very much for coming on Leaving the Ring.
And you know what? I appreciate you guys. I don't know how many listeners you have and how many fans you have. And no matter how many it is, I appreciate the fact that you give me a chance to come on and tell the story as I see it and as I know it. And all I ever ask for is just some fair journalism. And you've done that.
Absolutely.
That's all I can ask for, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. That's our job, I think a lot of times, the opinion kind of blurs the line of journalism, and I think it's only fair. When Dave booked Tim on, I said, well, let's get Gary on, because it's only fair. He's going to tell one story. I want to hear your side of it, So
absolutely.
I appreciate that. And
well,
I
that's why I said get either Alex Campanova on from Thompson or Ken Thompson and Richard Schaefer and see if there's a blur, if I'm missing something in my story. And I'm sure Ken Thompson and Alex Campanova can tell you a better story because, truthfully, they had Tim from the very first fight.
Right, right.
And they're very hurt. They're very hurt on a personal level. They're very, very hurt on a personal level. That I can tell you. Hurt by Tim.
Well, yeah, definitely, but business is business,
we'll
as they say, right?
Yeah. 100%. But again, I thank you both very much for giving me the opportunity. You're both gentlemen, and I appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you.
You have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Gary.
You got to sit back, and you got to take from what both guys are saying. The thing is this, is that you're not going to be able to know really what's going on. You're going to have to take... I think Timothy has some good points, but then Gary countered those points and made us look at something a lot more different. You know what I mean, Gabriel? And that's what was the beauty about having them both on the show is that you're so set on exactly what one particular person is saying, until the next one comes around and says, look, there's two sides to a coin. You just don't listen to one side. You got to look at both sides here. Now, it's up to the listener that sits back and picks what they want to hear. I'm going to definitely have to go back and listen to this segment so that I can re-listen to it, because there was so much, you know, information and things were being talked and thrown out there. That as myself, I actually got lost into it and became a listener, not an interviewer here. And good thing is that Gable was taking really control of it, because I was listening to everything that Mr. Gary Shaw was saying to us here on Leave It in the Ring. I got to tell you, my question was about the whole Angulo thing, was that how do you sign a fighter, which I wanted to ask him, but he said he was not going to talk about it. He was going to drop that there. Was how do you sign a fighter that you do not know is not legal? How does that happen? And this is not happening to Gary Shaw. This is not to Gary Shaw. This has happened a couple of times to promoters and stuff. Do you not check? I mean,
he could have and it could have run out. That might be the thing, you know. Similar to, you know, boxers don't pay their taxes. Maybe they just didn't keep up with it. My question was, I wanted to know if the story was true that Angulo drove across country for the Cintron fight in Gary's car, and that's why he got sick, and that they knew at the time. What I was told,
should have asked him.
That's why he wasn't able to fly, is because he was illegal. But he didn't want to answer any questions, and, you know, I didn't want to turn this thing into a hostile interview, so I just was respectful. But that's my question, is I've been told that they did know. And to how does HBO not know? That's my question.
How do they cut out a check under that particular person's name and not know? I mean, you've got to look at – there's a lot of things I'm looking at there, and I'm saying, I mean, Angulo was a guy that had a face – was known, was within the boxing community circuit, in the network circuit. How are you cutting this man a check and not know? You got to filter him back in through the system, right? When you get a check done, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a valid question there, but we will never know.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully maybe one day Gary can tell us, you know, like I said before, we don't know the in and out of loops of particular things. But like I said, I think he gave us a lot of great information. Well, you have to sit back and go, okay, you can't put all the blame on the promoter. And that's something that we try not to do here on the show or anytime, is sit back and go, well, let's blame this guy, because, you know, automatically fight fans look at the promoters as the devil. You know, this guy is just looking to make money. Well, of course he's looking to make money. Who wouldn't want to try to make money? This is a business. In any business, you want to try to make money. You know, I think in anything that anybody does, when you're the top person signing the checks and making decisions, you automatically are the a-hole of any business.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... That, and, you know, I don't know, I want to talk to Top Rank about that allegation. I know Bob is kind of has spoken that a little bit in the media. I can't remember exactly what he said, but basically denied it, that why would I turn in somebody else's fighter? But it's not the rumor that you and I have heard, and I'm not going to repeat a rumor on the radio. Not something this serious, but you and I both know the story we've been told regarding who turned in Angulo, and I'll just leave it at that. Why don't we get to the fight weekend schedule on a lighter note?
Yeah, definitely, man.
all right, then. May 27th,
you know what?
Friday.
You're figuring that out really quick. It's really quick. I've got to keep adding on to this here. De La Hoya went to rehab. Okay, he's back out. He's retweeting an apology to Top Rank, Bob Arum, and Manny Pacquiao. Hey, I just hope you get better out there. I hate to see anybody get caught up in any kind of drug. But again, dude, what are you doing with an 80 drug? There's designer things out there. Hanging out with Hattie and Joe Calzaghe. What happened? Now it starts to make me really think, were these guys partying up together? I don't know.
No.
Not a jab for you, but
that's preposterous, Dave.
I know. I know. I don't know if maybe
a
hack. Go ahead.
I'm gonna throw a theory out. Just so that if it happens, we can pull this show up, and I can go, see, I was right. Oscar leaves rehab, quote unquote.
Right.
In a month or so, he's gonna go, I feel better now. I can finally train the way I want to. I feel healthy for the first time in a long time. And he comes back and he fights Ricky Hatton in the UK. And then maybe comes back with a Canelo fight.
Labeled as the fight of the cartel.
They try to get me to go to rehab. Yeah. No, I'm telling you, I bet you Oscar comes back for one more fight. He does it against Ricky Hatton. I've heard up to like 3 weeks ago, somebody even repeated this to me the other day and said it was true that we were on the right track, that Oscar was coming back. I was thinking about it up till about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now, who knows if this is real? I'm not going to doubt him on the rehab.
He's
got an issue, you know, more power to him. But I'm telling
you, I know a lot of people right now are going like, Gable, you're way left field. You're crazy. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to back up my co-host on here about this. There has been rumors, too, that there is some financial problems within Golden Boy. So there could be a big, huge possibility that this could – you're absolutely right. This might happen. You know, a comeback of Oscar De La Hoya. I mean, that was the whole reason, sole reason – why he was, you know, still continuously fighting out of his prime was to upload, to help out, build out his promotional deal.
Yeah, I've heard that for a while, and I said that about the Floyd fight, that was really, you know, Oscar only had so many days left, only so many fights left, and they needed a guy to be their flagship. Floyd was that guy they were hoping for. Because, you know, forget about this whole Mayweather thing. That's not even real. You know, I mean, the head of the CSAC told me that like 2 or 3 weeks ago. They don't have a license. They've never applied for a promoter's license. And when you look at,
like so many others,
you look at how it's listed, like on BoxRec or Fight Facts or any of that stuff, it's always Golden Boy's lead promoter, you know, in association with Mayweather Promotions. They're not a real promotional company. So they wanted Floyd to be their guy. They got a few good fights out of him, made a lot of money. Then Oscar, you know, they couldn't do the rematch because nobody wanted to see it. And then Oscar went after Pacquiao, and that was a bold move. That move was really about, because you remember, Hopkins took out Pavlik, and, you know, soon after that was the De La Hoya fight. And they really thought that was going to be the end of Top Rank. They'd take out their two top guys in Pavlik and Pacquiao, and Golden Boy would reign supreme. And instead, Oscar got retired. And, you know, one person in the industry said that he really believes Oscar didn't think that he was all done, that he had a few more of those kind of, you know, kind of the welfare check from HBO to Golden Boy. You know, he comes in, he fights, he sells out, there's a bunch of pay-per-views, they make a ton of money, and they'll do that 2-3 more times, and Golden Boy's future is secure financially. Well, now that Oscar's gone, where are their big stars? You know, you got Canelo, kind of a burgeoning star. Khan, not a big draw here, does well in the UK, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them do more fights in the UK because of that.
And you're still building Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who still is not – he has not hit that mark of stardom at all as well. You know, I really agree. You know, before we even get off topic really quick, I want to say, you know, Roy Jones Jr. has been one of my favorites for a very long, long time since I was really young. Machine Gun – Roy Jones was the original nickname that he had when he came into the boxing scene. He got knocked out in the last round, only 10 seconds left out of that round, and I just hope and pray that he stays, he doesn't return back to the ring. You know, fight fans, sometimes you guys, we can be a little cruel, but I've seen a lot of fight fans in there saying this was deserved. Come on, man. See another man get knocked out, could possibly, who has children of his own, you know, and needs to put food on the table. It's not deserved to see him get hurt and knocked out like that. You know, you need to check yourself when you kind of say particular things like that, man. It's just not right. It's not fair. You got to remember these guys put their lives on the line for entertainment for guys like us. Some of them stay in the game a little longer. It's something in boxing that's happened numerous times. This is nothing new. But to sit back there and laugh at a man that just been KO'd, who's way past his prime, that shouldn't be in the ring, is, to me, it's just sickening, man. It's really, it's sad.
It really is depressing. And it is, you know, people are just kind of cruel. And to me, you know, be in the ring. Just don't be in the ring with punchers. Good Lord. You know, go on your European tour, fight some no-name guys, let people that never got to see you live see you, and, you know, maybe win a few, lose a few. Sugar Ray Robinson did it back in the day when he needed money past his prime. It's not a new thing. But why fight a puncher? Why act like you're still in the mix, fighting a guy like Lebedev, who just went 12 rounds with Marco Hook and almost beat him? But one more from the rumor mill, and I will actually confirm. I've heard that Golden Boy is not doing as well financially as people would say. And one person in the industry said, I wouldn't be surprised if they start laying people off soon. You know, not to put their laundry out there, but that's what we do here: is report the news or report things that we've heard. But here's another thing that I've heard, that this Victor Ortiz-Floyd Mayweather fight that keeps getting thrown out as a rumor. I broke that on Twitter this last week, and me and Steve were doing dueling tweets because he was breaking at the same time. That from Rolando Arellano, Ortiz's manager, no talks have taken place, no contract, no negotiations, nothing, nada, zilch. That fight does not exist. I don't care what people are saying. And I didn't hear this from Rolando. I heard it from another source who I really trust. Who said that this is just a rumor that's being floated by Heyman and Golden Boy about Ortiz, but that it isn't actually true, and that the fight that is going to happen is probably going to be Spadafora, probably late summer, early fall, Mayweather and Spadafora. But that's the opponent they've been looking at all along, and that's probably what's going to happen. So you never know. We'll see, you know, how that turns out. Well, let me get to the fight schedule. We got about 10 minutes left here on the show, and there's a couple fight picks I'm sure we're going to want to make. May 27th, Friday, 2011, at the Reno Event Center in Reno, Nevada. Chris Areola, 31-2, coming back just 2 weeks after his last fight against Nagy Aguilera, takes on Kendrick Relaford, 22-14-2. I've got a story up today on Max Boxing, a full interview with Chris. I'm picking Chris to win this one. It's kind of another... Stay busy, but you know, don't let the record fool you. This guy will go rounds. He's going to have to be broken down to the body, and it's a chance for Chris to work on some other things and to stay active. He wants to fight 5 or 6 times this year, so I look for a knockout, but probably round 5 or 6, maybe round 7, as Chris kind of works on spacing, works on head body, body head, and then gets the guy out of there. Underneath that, a guy I've covered for quite a while now, also 24-14-2, Maurice Harris. Takes on Tony the Tiger Thompson, 35-2. This is also, you know, in support on ESPN. This is for the number 2 spot in the IBF as part of their kind of eliminator tournament. I like this fight a lot, dude. I mean, it's kind of two journeymen. You know, Thompson's 39, Harris is 35, right. I believe. I'm gonna go with a little bit with my gut, a little bit with my head in terms of skill set. I'm going Maurice Harris. They're both about the same size, but I think Moa's got better wheels. He's been pretty active. He's been off, I think, since August, and Thompson's been off since November. But I think he can move a little bit better. He's a good counterpuncher. He's a smart guy in the ring. But it's really a 50-50 fight. It's two journeyman fighters going at it. But
I like Thompson in this fight as well. I mean, you know, Moa, too, I think he's got a lot of the capabilities. At the same time, though, you just cannot count out Tony Thompson at all. The Tiger is just going to be a fall away, you know, at Maurice Harris. You know, this is a fight where both guys are just going to have to come in tip-top shape, tip-top game, and they're going to have to throw the tip-top shots in order to get past each other. Whoever's going to take this, I think we just got in for a good fight. The headline is going to be Chris the Nightmare, but to me, the fight of the headline is going to be Thompson and Harris. That fight right there is a heavyweight fight that a lot of Americans have been wanting to capture something of a good heavyweight fight. You're going to get something, not a great heavyweight fight, but you're going to get a good, decent heavyweight fight among two American fighters, heavyweight fighters, stepping in the ring on Friday night, ESPN.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun night, you know, and that's then we've got also in Mendoza, Argentina, Juan Revico versus he's 26-1 versus John Perez, 18-3-1. The number's at the 7 flyweight. fighting an unranked guy. That's kind of a fight you probably should be able to find on the stream. And then Saturday night in Mazatlan, Sinaloa, Mexico, Jorge Linares, 30-1, versus Francisco Cordero, 24-1. And this is junior lightweights in action. I'm going to go Linares on this. I think he's just overall has got a better skill set. Cordero, serviceable guy, but I just don't think he's on the level of Linares, who's been off for quite a while, so there might be some ring rust, but I still think he's just a class above. And that is your weekend fight schedule. There's a lot of fights going on around the world, but not a lot going on TV.
Absolutely. No, definitely. And don't forget, the mailbag with Mark Ortega is still open. You still have time to send out your questions right now. Send them to leavingtheRing@gmail.com. Our prediction and picks are on the website, leavingtheRing.com. Check it out. Thank you very much, everybody that tunes in and listens to Leaving the Ring. I apologize. We did get some mail here upset that we didn't do a Thursday show. Again, I apologize. It was a last-minute thing. And a lot of fans are saying, listen, if you're not going to do a show, guys, give us the best of Leaving the Ring. Hey, you know what? You ask for it, you're going to get it. But I just don't know when me and Gabe are going to take a day off. We got a lot of things in the work right now, so we're going to be stepping it up again and try to bring some of the best that we can here on Leaving the Ring. Like you said before, you know, we never say we're number one. We're just happy to be among one of the ones that are here to talk boxing, and you guys are able to listen too. Once again, I had a great night. Had a great night with my co-host, Gable Montoya. Had a great night with the listeners and our guests. Tune in next week on Thursday night with us again talking boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk. Make sure the beer is cold. Don't let it go warm. And no beer runs. Don't do beer, no beer runs. You better buy yourself two cases here on Leaving in the Ring. You guys have a good night.
Peace.